is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins. Touchdown, Buffalo. McCoy. Touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome to the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown in for Murph all week. And look who's to my left. It's not Donald Jones, for those MSG viewers at home. And for the listeners on the radio side, it's Steve Tasker.
Hey, Brownie.
Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to be on with you.
Yeah, what have you been doing? Maybe would be the better question.
It's been a nice
summer.
Getting
out playing any golf at all?
I was out, only the last 2 days.
Okay.
Yeah, I took a break today. I actually got an invitation to play earlier today, and I decided to rev up for the show.
Yeah. You probably could have squeezed 9 in.
It was offered.
Yeah.
I just
declined.
I needed a break. What can I say?
Okay.
I needed a break.
So it's Steve and I today with you guys at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We had a quarterback-centric show yesterday. It is a quarterback-driven league after all, and we will be diving into a little bit of a different quarterback topic that is going to gain some more momentum and steam, I think, as we get to the end of training camp, preseason, and the fall, because there are some quarterbacks out there whose contracts are going to have to be addressed, and we'll get into that in a second. We will be talking to former NFL agent Joel Corey about some of these quarterback things. He'll be a guest on the show with us in the 2 o'clock hour. But coming up at 12:30 is a little bit of a special treat. We have the special teams end of the Bills spectrum covered here, only because you're here, but one of your former teammates.
No, yeah, it's somebody better than me, Mark Pike.
Mark Pike will be in at 12:30, so we look forward to talking to him.
He's such a good friend of mine. I mean, we've been, obviously we've known each other and played together.
What was it, like 10 years you guys played
together? We played together for 11 and a half.
11 and a half.
And almost exclusively special teams together. He's the greatest big man special teams player of all time. He was an absolute treasure to have as a teammate. He's a good friend of mine. It'll be fun to see him. I haven't even seen him yet. He's in the building.
Yeah.
Jim's got his football camp going on, and Mark's here for that.
Yeah, he got hired for that.
Yeah, and hired, yeah. So
he's here. That's why I use that word.
He's here, and it's going to be great to see him. I haven't even laid eyes on the big guy yet, so it'll be fun.
Yeah. When was the last time you saw him?
Wow, he doesn't come back all the time
for
Jim's tournament.
Does he live in Kentucky?
Well, Northern Kentucky, just south across the river from Cincinnati.
Okay.
And Covington, Kentucky down there. He started with a little fitness business. And now he's got it going on.
He's a mogul. Is he mogul? Is he mogul status?
He owns the largest water aquatics facility in the tri-state area down there. He's got a huge facility that he runs.
Good for him.
Owns and runs, and he's got a an Olympic pool, it's got a diving pool, it's got, football fields, it's got a therapy pool, it's a play pool. It's unbelievable. And that's one of the facilities he owns. He's also got an indoor facility. I think he still does. An indoor facility that he bought. It used to be an indoor soccer facility.
Okay.
Now he took that out. Now it's competitive cheerleading. He's got like 600 girls running through there all the time.
I know you've been to the NFL Combine a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, every year we are there, there is also a national cheerleading competition going on at the same time. So here you are walking through the convention center in Indy, and there is a parade of ponytails and ribbons and
they're
cheerleading
all like
outfits.
They're 3 feet tall. They are everywhere.
Yeah.
And they are dead.
Like by the hundreds.
Dead serious.
Oh,
I mean dead serious.
Yeah. It is
forget the combine. You want to talk intensity. Talk moms and daughters on a national level.
Yeah.
It's woo.
Yeah, they're there every year. Yeah. They must schedule them at the same time.
So he's got that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his thing.
If he's close enough to Indy out there, I mean,
and
tap
then
into
he
that.
Also has a freestanding fitness center as well. It's like a 3-story freestanding building.
Good Lord.
Yeah, he's
him and Terry Pegula could have some good conversations.
He's into it, and he's doing very well with it.
So we'll have Mark Pike in studio with us here at the bottom of the hour, so we look forward to that. Catching up with him, maybe talking about a couple of old games. We are kind of running through on MSG the top 10 television series which has covered a whole bunch of topics so far. They've had three of the five episodes air already, and if you haven't had a chance to see those, they are re-airing several times during the day. The first three episodes that have been on, we've had the top 10 moments in Bills history, which includes the comeback game that, you know, both of you guys were a part of. They've got the top 10 offensive players in team history, and then they just had the top 10 defensive players in team history. You know, it's not on the schedule, but, you know, maybe you and Mark, along with me, maybe we can run down the top 10 special teamers in team history, because it's not on the list right now, Steve. It's not on the list of programs to be aired.
It's a common problem. I need to say,
That's right. Yeah.
I got to watch more TV, because I have caught, you know, highlights of the top 10 offensive guys and of course the top 10 memorable moments.
Yeah.
All of which, you know, were great. But I haven't seen the one with the defensive players.
That just aired on Monday. Yeah.
And what are the last two episodes? What are they going to be?
Last one will be top 10 draft diamonds. So what that is anybody, at least from what I've been told by our fine folks down the hall at Buffalo Bills Entertainment, is going to be any draft pick taken in round four or later.
That got to the Pro Bowl or something,
or
All-Pro or something like that?
Well, yeah, draft diamonds. Guys that were diamonds in the rough, so to speak, right. Later round draft choices.
You
would expect a guy like, you know, Kyle Williams to be on there. He's
absolutely
a fifth-round pick. You know, a guy like that would be a good example.
Be high.
Stevie Johnson was a seventh-round pick. He had like three 1,000-yard seasons. I would expect him to be in contention for that. And then the last one is top 10 individual performances in team history. So, you know, you think of the Eric Moulds playoff game against the Dolphins when he had 240 receiving yards on 9 catches. Just some insane games like that. I'm sure Bruce has some four-sack
thing on a Monday night. Jim had a
five-touchdown game against Pittsburgh.
Those are
the two episodes that remain. There will not be an airing of one of those last two next week due to the July 4th holiday, but right after that, July 10th and July 17th, those Mondays, 9 p.m. MSG, is where those last two programs will air.
You can bet, though, if it's like the other episodes, they're going to be on all the time. You'll be able to catch it at some point.
And I know after the series has its run on MSG, they will be available for fans that do not get MSG. Right. You know, we have so many Buffalo transplants around the country that are just craving Bills stuff, and they often just go to BuffaloBills.com. It will be available there. Right. After the series runs its course.
What else are we going to do today? We're going to do the fake news, real news. We're going to do the
quarterbacks. Yeah, we got some good fake news, real news.
Are we still going to talk about the Derek Carr deal and how it's going to trickle down through the league?
Well, I mean, that's kind of where we're going to start today, because for those that don't know, Derek Carr did finally sign his big contract extension that was up and probably at the top of the list for Bay Area fans of the Raiders. You know, what's happening with Derek Carr? What's happening with Derek Carr? They said they would get it done. They finally did get it done to the tune of 5 years, $125 million, with $40 million in guarantees at the time of signing. So it sounds like a gigantic deal, and he now is at the top of the list for average salary among quarterbacks in the league, just a shade over $25 million per.
Yeah, just over Andrew Luck.
Right, because Luck's at $24.5 per year on average. But this is a situation that kind of reminds me of I was watching an ESPN 30 for 30, and they were doing it on the Celtics-Lakers rivalry of the 80s.
Right.
And they had a game where McHale goes off for 56 points, sets the record for the Celtics record for most points in a single game. Well, the record lasted about 12 days because Larry Bird goes off for 60 12 days later.
Yeah,
he's like, Kevin McHale's not going to have
that
record.
That number, this number, they negotiate these things. They're going to get overtaken.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Derek Carr's money for $125 million, $70 million of it's guaranteed. That's
yeah,
a big,
40
that's
when
a
he just signed it.
Yeah,
he got
40
put in his pocket with a check as soon as he signed that thing.
Yeah.
And yes, you're right. There's another 30 in guarantees coming down the pike. But the 25, usually what agents are after is the average salary per season. What does that average out to? Total money is important, too, along with guarantees. But that's really the benchmark.
Yeah, that's the benchmark. It's average over the life of the deal for the agents, because then they can go into the next, you know, this agent over here can go into his place and say, this is what I need to average. For the players, I mean, you got to know it's all about the guaranteed money.
Right. But much like, you know, Kevin McHale's 56-point record for the Celtics stood for all the 12 days, Derek Carr's seat at the top of the average salary list for quarterbacks in the NFL is probably going to last maybe a couple of months, Maybe.
Yeah. And it comes down to, I mean, you got a list of guys who's going to be next because it's, you know, they've got, and the obvious thing is Kirk Cousins, Matt Stafford, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, all these guys are next. And we've got some discussions about who do you think is going to be. There's some word out there now about Kirk Cousins. This contract's been going for a while because he already played under a franchise tag.
Right.
And got, you know, $24 million for being a franchise. And if he gets franchised after this season, or if he plays this season out and gets the $24
million,
and they want to do it again, it's going to be $34 million next year. That ain't going to happen.
That doesn't seem feasible.
And the simple fact of the matter is, now they're starting to look at, there's starting to be some murmurings coming out of Washington from some different sources about, hey, maybe the fact is he just doesn't want to play for the Redskins anymore. He won't sign the deal no matter what.
This guy was third in passing yards last year.
He had a great season. They found him in the fourth round. He was taken in the same draft as RG3, and you know, which this brings up so many points of conversation. How many guys would benefit from sitting behind a number one draft pick who fails and learning all of it, watching his mistakes, and not making those same mistakes himself, and then all of a sudden getting thrown in there and being more successful than they ever thought the number one draft pick would be. Yeah. So Kirk Cousins is in a great spot, but they can't get a deal done. They cannot get a deal done, and unless they do, this guy might ring the bell if he comes out in 2018. If he hits the market. Woo. But that may be exactly what he wants to do. He may be willing to play for the Redskins as long as they can hold him until he starts making $30 million a year, and they just can't do that.
All I remember is him coming off the field last year after a win and looking at the GM square in the face, and it was caught on camera. And, you know, he's telling him, whatever one of his sayings was, you like that, you know you do, like one of those things. And it was just like, holy cow. He just
Oh, yeah.
He didn't emasculate the GM, but it was pretty darn close right in front of television cameras. I'm like, I kind of know where this relationship is right now.
Yeah.
But that's what we're posing to you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. You saw Derek Carr get his big money deal. Who do you think gets paid at the quarterback position next? It's also our Twitter poll today, you know, where we're asking you who's the next guy in line to make big money as a quarterback in the NFL. And among the choices, Matt Stafford, Marcus Mariota, Kirk Cousins, or another quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, like Steve mentioned. Maybe it's Drew Brees. Drew Brees is a little bit of a different animal because he's 39 years old. And
he's 38.
Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. He doesn't look like he's slowing down at all. I mean,
he threw for 5,000 yards last year.
There are 9 5,000-yard passing seasons in the history of the NFL. He's got five of them.
He's got five of them.
He's got five of them, and he's 39.
And he's six feet tall.
Yeah.
He's 6 feet tall.
I don't know if there's a more accurate thrower than him.
I get it. I think on that list you just showed on the – I think the guy who's going to ring the bell next is Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford, you know, he's been around forever. We've been watching. He's 29.
Yeah.
He's 29 years of old.
You asked me. I thought he was like 31, so that even surprised me.
He's 29. He's not even 30 years old yet. Matt Stafford's been around forever, and he is now up to be, I think, the next highest-paid quarterback. I think this is the guy that this conversation is going to center around. His agent, Tom Condon, is well-respected around the league. He is an absolute beast when he goes in on behalf of his quarterbacks. Tom Condon, he's a former offensive lineman in the NFL, and he still protects quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, he's got Eli Manning, Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers.
His guys, he's going to ring the bell with Detroit. This is a team that I'm telling – and don't forget what Matt Stafford did. He was doing it all those years with Calvin Johnson, with all those guys. Last year, Calvin Johnson retires, and he proves he can still do it without a guy like Calvin Johnson in the mix. Matt Stafford's the next guy that's going to get paid. And I think Detroit is, you know, they should be on that right now. That should be job one for that entire franchise.
And they got a hefty amount of criticism for letting Ndamukong Suh go in free agency and not getting him done with a big money deal. You didn't get that guy done, you know, your most important defensive player. You better get this one right.
Well, I think
you can't miss on this one.
Listen, I think if they don't sign Matt Stafford, I think their fans will burn that building down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just an absolute atrocity if they let that guy get away.
You know, and you mentioned his agent, Tom Condon, and here's an interesting part of the mix, and agents do think about this completely, especially when they have multiple clients. Mm-hmm. Now, Condon also has Matt Ryan, and he's due for an extension next year at this time.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know what Condon's going to be doing with the Stafford deal. You know, pump it up as much
as absolutely.
He can, knowing his next client's going to be in line, and you can get more for him the next year.
Yeah. Well, that's the way – the numbers are never going to go down.
Yeah.
And for these guys who are
but
in the
push
right –
push that envelope as much
right.
as you can.
The numbers are never going to go down. The cap's looking like it's going to be $180 million next year. The slice of the pie that goes to the quarterbacks is always big, and you've got to anticipate that. And Tom Condon, don't kid yourself. I mean, it's a huge benefit for an agent to have more than one quarterback, particularly at this point in their career when both of them have just knocked it out of the park individually. Matt Stafford, I mean, think about where the Atlanta Falcons were before he was on their team. Now they've been in the championship game once or twice. They're in the playoffs. They're contending in the division every year. I mean, and it's because of him and his ability to throw it. So, you know, these are quarterbacks that are absolutely in the right spot, and they're going to ring the bell. But I think Stafford goes first, then it's going to be Matt Ryan. Drew Brees, I think, is going to be up there in average pay, but he's going to be like a one-year deal extension,
right.
one-year
That's
deal
where,
extension, one-year deal extension.
And both sides seem to be happy with that in New Orleans, at least in terms of how it's operating. And I guess it makes sense. You know, maybe Brees isn't the kind of guy that wants to think beyond the upcoming season, number one. Number two, when you're still putting up stupid numbers like that, why are you going to lock yourself in to a contract that could be antiquated in a year? With all these guys re-signing and re-signing and re-signing. And again, this is another guy represented by Tom Condon, and he's probably telling Drew also, you know, why are we going to sign you to a long-term deal at 39? There's no job security in a quarterback contract. You're getting the money up front anyway in most cases. And at 39, if you're still putting up 5,000-yard seasons, I can negotiate more for you when you're up again the next year.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree. Plus, once he signs the deal, even if it's a one-year extension, the money is virtually guaranteed anyway. I mean, you get it.
Yeah.
Whether you twist your ankle stepping off the curb or whether you have an injury on the football field that ends your season, you're getting the money. So it's not as though it's just a great deal for him if he's willing to do it. Now, certainly, the numbers make it easier to make that decision, particularly when you're talking about $25 million a year or maybe $30 million a year for a guy like Brees on a one-year deal. That's the way they're going to do it. And that's good for the club as well, because then they're not – then once Drew Brees does reach the end of it, if he does play till he's 41, 42, or whatever he seems to be able to, they're not locked in for 2 years after that trying to clear their cap space.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Who do you think gets the next big money deal at the quarterback spot? You know, Steve thinks it's Matt Stafford. We've got the Twitter poll up as well. It looks like a lot of people think Stafford's the next in line as well there. You want to talk about a trickier scenario. There's one in New England, and there's one in Minnesota. With Brady, he signed a two-year, $41 million extension last year that included a $28 million signing bonus. Now, that's kind of how the Patriots have operated with him. He's 40. He says he wants to play 6 to 7 more years, but you've got Garoppolo in the last year of his deal. And they could have traded him for something this offseason, probably for a lot. They were asking for a couple of ones.
Their team's standing in line.
They easily could have had a first-round pick for Garoppolo. They chose to hold on to him. Why? Why are they holding on to him if Brady, you know, maybe they don't believe Brady can play 6 more years, but you would think he could play at least 1 or 2 more years at the level he's currently playing at. He's got some kind of fountain of youth regimen that he doesn't even make public, but a lot of people around the league are saying – most of the quarterbacks in the league are going to be doing this in 10 years, what Brady's doing now to keep himself fresh and productive. You got an all-world quarterback, but you got a young kid who's not bad either. You always have to look towards the future, but what is the future with Brady? That's the tough call there.
My thought about it is this. Certainly he's in the conversation for the greatest of all time at that position. You got to think he's has raised the bar. Six Super Bowls, four championships, all kinds of win records, all kinds of passing records. I mean, the guy is maybe the best guy to ever take a snap in the NFL. I know this. It rarely ends well for the great ones.
Right.
You can bet for as much as Robert Kraft loves Tom, as much as Bill Belichick loves Tom, as much as the fans love Tom, and as much as Tom loves being a Patriot and loves the organization and everything they've done for him, as much as he feels like he owes them for drafting him when they did, it's not going to end well. He wants to keep playing. Now, maybe that's just words. Maybe he's saying, hey, I want to play 6 or 7 years. I'm going to come on and be 45, 46. I mean, who thinks that? He may just be saying that. But look at the contract, look at what they're giving him, and look at down the road of 2 or 3 years where nobody can really see how it's going to evolve. And I think that's the window that the Patriots are going to give Tom Brady. I think at the end of it, he's going to want to play more, and they're going to have to come to him and say, you're not going to play anymore.
That's what makes the timing so interesting. I mean, he's entering the final year of his deal this season, this current 2-year extension that he's on. I think they string that out as long as they can.
They may, but I'll tell you what, if they go in there and win another Super Bowl, what are they going to do? And I'll tell you what, with Stephon Gilmore and Malcolm Butler, the best corners in the business, with Bill Belichick and that defense, you know what he's done? He did the last time he had two good corners? He won the world championship.
Yeah.
With Darrelle Revis and
Butler was the third corner, and they had Logan Ryan back there.
Oh, my gosh. Those guys.
And Brandon Browner.
Brandon Browner, that's the guy.
Yeah.
He's going to win it again.
So
what are you going to do then?
That's the thing. And that's what makes it interesting here, because it's almost like the Patriots, in a very inconspicuous way, are – because if I'm in that front office, I'm saying – yeah, we got the greatest quarterback ever, but you're almost waiting for the downturn to reveal itself.
It hasn't happened.
But last year, this deal at 40, there aren't too many guys that played beyond 40. I know George Blanda did, but he was mostly a kicker at the end of his career. He wasn't playing quarterback.
He played till he was 46. He played 26 seasons, and he was kicking for the last 15 of it.
Yeah, so, you know, this is a rarity, and I'm not saying – I mean, Brady is Brady, so maybe he can do that. But if you're that front office, I think you're waiting a little while, maybe at least till October. And if he's still showing that he's got it, all right, maybe sit down and talk turkey extend him a year.
Yeah, but a two-year
deal.
You
go 1 year now?
A two-year deal at $40 million with 28 guaranteed, still only $20 million a year.
Right.
That's a bargain for a guy
Tom Brady.
For a guy who got you to six Super Bowls and who's winning it again. So look for them to do that again. They'll keep him cap friendly. They'll guarantee him money. And I think probably at the end of it, if I know Robert Kraft and Brady and all those guys, they'll say, Tom, here's a deal. We're going to put this on paper. You're going to make a laughing stock of a salary. You're going to get $20 million again for the next year or two.
Yeah.
But when it's all over said and done, we're going to bring you back and I'll pay you $15 million a year as a consultant when you're not playing anymore.
Hmm.
And maybe that's what happens to it. I don't know. But Brady has always been willing to work with the club. I mean, he's $20 million a
year. His base salary this year is $1 million.
Yeah.
That's, they give him all bonuses.
How enormous is that? So he's working with the club. I mean, he's going to make it work more so than any other player. Now, here's another thing that just occurred to me when we were talking about this. It may be that that's his goal, to play till he's 45. And he will do whatever it takes money-wise after
making all this. Play for peanuts.
Play for peanuts, put a good team around me, and we'll keep winning. And I'm willing to do that because of what you did for me, with the opportunity. Because he really is, and I'm telling you this, for all the great play he's put out there, he still feels a sense of gratitude to Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick for giving him the chance.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy he is. And that's what's driven him to eat and sleep and drink everything that he – you know, that has kept him young.
Who is next to cash in at the quarterback position in the NFL? 803-0550. We go to the phones. Ron and Alden leading us off here this morning, or this afternoon, I should say. Boy, where has the day gone for me? Ron, thanks for joining us. What do you got for us?
You know, you guys are naming all the great quarterbacks in the game today. And excuse me. And I want to go outside the box here. I don't understand Tyrod Taylor's contract, details and all that. Let's say this is his breakout year. I mean, he just has an amazing year, and I'm not saying he's going to ring the bell contract-wise, but he has this amazing year. Like, oh, he did become Russell Wilson, for example. Like, wow, he made it. He's got the right coaching. He's hitting his receipt. Wow, this is what we expected. Who's more in the bind, the Bills how long does this contract work where he can now turn around instead of him taking cuts and, you know, where he now can be the demanding guy? And, of course, it would be great. It works out for everybody. But let's say he just has that remarkable season. Like, okay, well, okay, wait, he's hit it. He's, the light's gone on. This is the guy. Where does he stand as far as his next contract? I don't know, understand his current one, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, they redid the deal. He took a $10 million haircut to do it, and the total contract value is just over $30 million. It averages 15 and a quarter a year, and right now he's the 21st highest paid quarterback in the league in terms of average salary per season at the quarterback position. Now, his base salary is guaranteed this year in full, $7.5 million, and then next year he's only got $1 million guaranteed of his $10 million salary, and that's kind of where it is. So the Bills can get off the hook relatively easy after this year. If he has a monster year this year, he's still under contract for next year and has a cap figure of $18 million. So if he breaks out this year and has a monster season, the Bills have him on the hook for the next year anyway. And if they're inclined to sign him to an extension, they've got time to work with there.
Yeah,
it's
a great
contract. To even see what he does following year.
They don't get into a bind unless he has a breakout year next year. Then
right.
It's a bind. And then they can franchise him. And Tyrod, given the money that he's making now, the franchise tag by that time will be upwards of $26, $27, maybe, you know, $30 million with all these numbers that we're talking about these other guys making. So it'll be a franchise tag, which means the top three at his position in the league, that he's got to be paid commensurate with the average of the top three. That's a big number. And they'll franchise him for 1 year, 2 years, or whatever. And then they have time to work with him. But they won't get into a bind, really, if he has a breakout year this year, because then they'll have the buffer of a full 12-month calendar year and a full season to work with him on an extension. And given the history and what happened this last contract talk, Tyrod wants to be here, knows they're doing something special. That may be even more the case if he has a breakout year this year in Buffalo. He'll want to stick around more, so they'll start working together and get it done, pound out a deal. I think both sides are betting on Tyrod. A lot of it has been said about Tyrod having a breakout year. The Bills are betting on him as well without having to put that much money down. They know the return is going to be, you know, 8-1 on the odds that they're betting this year. And I think Tyrod likes those odds. I think Tyrod's a great guy, doing a great thing by betting on himself. I think it's a smart thing to do, particularly in this particular situation. But there's no question. I don't think they're in a bind this year. They may be in a bind next year if they get to the end of the season. Tyrod has killed it for two straight years. They're going to have to get him back under contract because it's over after 2018 season. So if he has a breakout year this year, they're fine.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Who's the next big quarterback to cash in? When we come back, we will have another former Bills special teams ace. To Steve's left, it will be Mark Pike joining us here in studio. I'm a former soccer player. You guys run down the field. I'll kick it. I'll punt it for you guys. And you guys can cover.
If you kick it, believe me, we'll reflexively chase it.
So we'll be back with Mark Pike on the other side. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on the John Murphy Show as the main guys are on vacay. It's that time of the year, I guess, in the NFL. It's very popular for people in the NFL to hightail it out of the office. Last week in June, first 2 weeks in July, it's like the most popular vacation times by far because it is the deadest time. Around NFL offices.
Yeah, the NFL goes dark.
Players are gone, you know, front
office. Even that window's starting to squeeze down. It used to be the entire month of June. Now they pushed all that, you know, OTAs and mini camps back. And it's like 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. Last week of June, first 3 weeks of July. And it's squeezing and squeezing.
I'm telling you, though, you know, before that 2011 CBA, it was even worse because there were, you know, 30, 35 practice sessions, several of them in pads through the spring. And, you know, you're finishing with that mini camp. That's all gone now.
Yeah.
And you only have 13 practices, none in pads.
We got to talk about that sometime, about what, you know, the schedule of the league. I mean, it's a year-round league now.
Yeah.
I mean, even – and it's they get so much attention, 11 and a half, 12 months a year. You know, you can start to dissect what they ask the players to do, how much money they pay the players, and what they're allowed to do. And most of it centers around the fact that the players need rest from the physical exertion of playing. And because if you let the – it used to be if you let the coaches have these guys for 12 months a year, they're going to be in pads 12 months a year, and nobody would be able to play 16 games. I mean, you have guys – you'd have a roster of 90 guys, 40 of which would be injured out for the year. Coaches don't have an off switch.
Right.
They don't.
Well, and that's why – that, you know, it's what we were talking about yesterday on the show, was there's a quarterback development problem in the NFL. I don't think there's any question about that. Mm-hmm. And there are various number of reasons why. Number one, you know, you've got limitations on coaches developing players now with the new CBA because they're just not here. They can't talk to them, can't give them a playbook from January to April. They can't even talk to them and sit them down in a classroom.
If you want to make it better for quarterbacks or develop more quarterbacks who can play, you got to change some things, and that's a difficult process. I think, and we were talking about it before, and to get right to the point of what I thought after discussing a bunch of different options, one thing you should do, forget about development, just make the field wider. Widen the field to 60 yards instead of 53 and a third. That extra yards makes the windows bigger. More space for the young quarterbacks to throw it, more margin of error. You'll have more guys playing competitive, winning football at that position, and you won't have to develop it anymore. You got to lower that bar, because I'm telling you what, it is a high bar to jump over.
Yeah.
It is a difficult bar, particularly when there's no way to practice it unless you're actually on the field doing it.
We are waiting on the arrival of Mark Pike. We hope to have him here sooner rather than later, so we'll wait on him in the meantime. But, yeah, I mean, and you, I know you are maybe a little bit more familiar with the CFL game than most, since your son plays up there. Is he still in Hamilton?
Hamilton, yeah. They got their
heads
handed to him last Sunday.
Have you seen the evidence of bigger windows there with the wider field? How is their field 60 yards wide, or is it even more than that?
It's big.
NFL is 53 and a third.
Yeah, it's significantly wider. I don't know how much
longer,
wider
too.
It is.
The end zones are 20 yards.
Even so is the playing field. The playing field's 10 yards longer as well. The 55-yard, there's two 50-yard lines and a center line at 55 yards. The field is much, much wider, and there are 20-yard end zones on each end. So it's a 150-yard field from end line to end line, and significantly wider. The goalposts are on the front of the field. But I think the one thing that would translate to the NFL, just make the darn thing wider. It would create more space. It would put more pressure on a defense. It would make the windows for young quarterbacks to throw into that much wider. It would open the game up and make it the field that much easier to discern for a young quarterback. And I think that's one way you could do it. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. Although I know the league has talked about it. It's been brought up in competition committee discussions. One huge issue is obvious. Stadiums are going to have to be altered.
Otherwise, you're going to have players on the bench. But fans in row one and two will be able to sweat on them or something.
You'd be surprised, though. Most of the stadiums nowadays would accommodate a 60-yard wide field.
Right, because I know some of those, especially the ones down south,
they play soccer.
They've been built, to be soccer accommodating. Also, in the regulation soccer field for professionals is 120 by 80. So it's really wide. So you've got to really, you know, the grounds have to be significantly wider than a football field to accommodate soccer. We did just get word Mark Pike is hard at work at the Jim Kelly camp right now. So we're expecting him at 1:15. So stay tuned for
He's killing us.
We're all right. We're pros. And that brings us to the other part of the conversation that I finished the last segment with. We talked about the difficult decision in New England with Brady and Garoppolo, both in their final year of their current contracts. and the decision that has to be made there. It's probably going to be predicated on how Brady looks on the field through the course of the first half of this season. And as long as he's still performing up to the level that he has for the last several years, they probably just extend him a year and say, here's some more bonus money, thanks very much, Tom,
right,
and then figure it out with Garoppolo, what you're doing there, because he's not going to take peanuts in his second contract, and he's going to be looking for a starting opportunity. I don't think – I mean, he's hearing Brady wants to play six more years. He doesn't want his he doesn't want his career to die on the vine and never get on the field.
That's right.
So he's going to be probably not willing to sign a new deal if you extend Tom even a year.
And you're not going to franchise Garoppolo, but
no,
I mean, yeah, he'll go.
So,
I think before that, if he wants to put the pressure on them, he will be able to do that by not signing the deal, and they'll be forced then to make the move that we all thought they were going to move this year, make this year, and trade him. It'll be up to him to do with what he wants with his career, and that'll mean sitting tight on the bench behind Brady and waiting for a chance. But then again, you know, if you're Garoppolo, you know, a lot of people would like to take Tom Brady's chair,
right,
and win a couple of Super Bowls, and no matter what it takes. And Garoppolo, hey, who knows? He may be a guy that ends up playing 15 years as well, and sitting 4 or 5 years behind Brady wouldn't be all that bad.
Now, here's the other big decision, and it's in Minnesota with GM Rick Spielman. Obviously, they had to trade in a panic-type situation for Sam Bradford with the Philadelphia Eagles last year, after Teddy Bridgewater goes down with that horrific knee injury. Bridgewater is not cleared to practice fully, but at minicamp he was throwing routes on air and doing dropbacks, and they're encouraged by his progress. When he's going to be cleared is anybody's guess, and I don't foresee it happening in training camp or, heck, even the first half of the regular season. But this is a decision that bears watching also, because Bradford's contract is up after this year, as is Bridgewater's contract. They're both up. So it's a lot like the New England situation in terms of both guys being up at the same time. Obviously, Minnesota's barometer is strictly tied to Bridgewater's health. But you also have to look at what Bradford was able to do. Come into a new system last year, and he set the single-season record for completion percentage. Now, he's always been a dink-and-dunk guy. And so you would expect the completion percentage to be high. Played at $18 million, or he's going to play at $18 million a year this year. We got to see what happens with Bridgewater. Bradford's still only 29 years old. Again, another Tom Condon client. What is the decision to be made there? Do you buy time and just sign Bradford to a one-year extension? If he has another nice year this year, Tom Condon's not going for a one-year deal for a 29-year-old quarterback. He's not taking that. You've got to commit to that kid. You've got to commit to Bradford if he's had two solid seasons for you at the quarterback position. But what if Bridgewater is good to go for 2018, green light, back on the horse?
I don't know.
Teddy
Bridgewater, I don't know about
they
Teddy.
Drafted
what
him
I'm saying
to be their
is,
franchise
well,
guy.
Yeah, but here's what you think. You still don't know what Teddy Bridgewater can give you. Yeah, he had a nice little season that first year. He played very well, pretty accurate thrower. He's not very big, and he hasn't even played a full season. I mean, the guy's been nicked up a lot. It's hard to bet that kind of money on a guy that you don't know if he can line up. Same thing. That was a big knock on Sam Bradford when he was with the St. Louis Rams. They didn't know. He was, a lot of times, he was fragile. A couple of injuries kept him off the field. That made him expendable. But now you get a second solid season out of Bradford, and he's not even 30 years old. Hey,
he's,
I know
he's probably
what I,
your better long-term option
better
there, isn't
the
he?
Long-term option.
If he puts up another good year, Bradford's probably your better long-term option, because you're much like the Patriots, and maybe to a lesser degree, but Garoppolo has shown some nice potential and could be a pretty good quarterback in this league based on what we saw in that small 2 or 3 game sample last year at the beginning of the year when Brady was out on suspension. Bradford, you're going to have a lot longer sample size,
right,
to work with. And even if Bridgewater is healthy, as you mentioned, he didn't. His career had not reached critical mass yet where you're like, this is a proven guy, he's healthy now, we're hitching our wagon to him. You can't do that with Bridgewater based on the sample size.
Right, and I think if I'm the Minnesota Vikings, I sit down and look real closely at what I'm thinking about. And I'm saying if Sam Bradford comes out, get off, and is everything he seemed to be, starts out at 70% plus completions rating. Your team's functioning under him. He's evolved into the offense another year. That is the point at that moment, and when Teddy Bridgewater gets healthy, is the time you put Teddy Bridgewater on the trade block and get something for him before his contract runs out. Trade him to a team for whatever capital you can get for him, because at the end of that season, you're not going to stick with him anyway. You make that decision as early as you can, and you trade him. You trade the asset and get something for it for your team to help your guy who you are going with, Sam Bradford, win. And I think that's what the timing is pretty precarious for Minnesota in that regard, because both these guys' contracts are kind of coming up in the same time, and Teddy's not healthy yet. So that makes it difficult. But I think that's what you've got to do. You're not going to have Teddy Bridgewater backing up your starting quarterback and have both quarterbacks negotiating for a deal in the same year.
And this is going to lead us into our next conversation about this quarterback pool that exists in the NFL. We all talk about how there's probably a dozen teams starving for a bona fide starting quarterback that they feel they can hitch their wagon to for the foreseeable future. Based on how some of these contracts are aligned with some NFL clubs, there could be some pretty interesting options that actually either get to the market or could be up for trade compensation next offseason. We'll talk about that on the other side here. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown with you on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on the John Murphy Show as we're about closing out the first hour of the program. We expect to have Mark Pike in here in the second hour, probably around 1:15. He's currently being put to work at the Jim Kelly Youth Football Camp just outside our studios in the AdPro Sports Training Center. So he'll be doing that for a little bit longer, and then he'll get over here and join us. You gotta thwack him a little bit on that one.
Oh, I'll give him some trouble. Well, you ain't got a watch, big man.
Yeah, we're talking quarterbacks, and the big contract handed out to Derek Carr, and while he currently leads the NFL in terms of average salary per year among the quarterback pool at just a shade over $25 million per, we're talking about how that's going to be pretty short-lived because there are some other QBs who are going to get some mega deals coming up here in the not-too-distant future, probably a couple of them before the 2017 season begins in September. Chief among them, Matthew Stafford, who at 29 is going to cash in big time with the Lions. And then after that, perhaps Drew Brees, although he's been signing a lot of one-year extensions on his current deals, and we anticipate that'll probably happen again as he enters the season at age 39. But what we've been talking about for the last couple of segments is how the New England Patriots have a tricky decision to make. And you say, what's tricky about extending Tom Brady? He's 40, and you have Jimmy Garoppolo in the last year of his deal. So you got two quarterbacks, your top two on your depth chart, both in the final year of their deal. Yes, the logic would say stick with Brady, see how long he can play, but you're probably losing a commodity in Garoppolo in the process, who's probably not re-signing, especially if you extend Brady. And then the other one is in Minnesota, with Bradford and Bridgewater, both in the final year of their deals with the Vikings. Bradford put up a nice season under the gun, learning a new system for the Vikings last year. And Bridgewater is starting to throw again, coming off that horrific knee injury in last year's training camp. So they've got a decision to make as well. If Bradford puts up another year, do you stick with Bradford, or do you bank on the potential of Bridgewater if he comes through healthy and is cleared full go before the end of this year, or even cleared fully for 2018. And with those two decisions in mind, you know that the 2018 offseason could potentially be a zoo in terms of the quarterback market, because you would expect if the Patriots extend Brady, Garoppolo's probably not re-signing there. He'll be out on the market. If the Vikings choose to stick with Bradford at 29 years old for the long term, you probably see Bridgewater hit the market and look for a starting job somewhere else.
Either one. If they come back and go with Bridgewater, yeah. Bradford's on the
Bradford's market. So one of those guys is on the market. You would anticipate Garoppolo's probably on the market, so he can finally cash in. Alex Smith is probably one and done in Kansas City, as they will likely turn the page and go with Mahomes as their starting quarterback there. So that's three quarterbacks. Cousins, you already mentioned, as the franchise tag nightmare with Washington, they're not going to franchise him again in 2018 to the tune of $30 million plus.
$34
million. $34 million plus. So is he long-term in Washington? You don't know. He's probably not all that thrilled with how things have gone there. He's probably out on the market.
We've heard rumblings that now they're saying he doesn't even want to sign with the Redskins. If that's the case, well, then they're going to deal him. So he won't hit the market, but he will set the market as to what you're going to pay these guys. When he comes out and signs his deal, he will set the market. There's absolutely no question about it. Matt Stafford's going to make a big jump. He's going to jump over the top of Derek Carr because he's done more in the league than Derek Carr. It's just one guy after another. And you look at – and then, listen, this is great. In 2018, then you got to think about two guys that – one of which is on our Twitter poll this week or today about which guy's going to be the next guy to get paid. Some of you, Marcus Mariota is a name on there. The guy that was drafted right ahead of him is Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
Jameis Winston and the Tampa Bay
Those
Buccaneers
guys aren't going anywhere.
Are poised – the Buccaneers are poised to have a breakout season. They have they really knocked it dead on draft day this year. They got a couple of guys, even through free agency. They have really primed.
Howard,
yeah, they've
DeSean
got some
Jackson.
Guys. So it's going to be interesting to see Jameis Winston's contract when it comes up. Cam Newton sooner or later is going to have to sign a new deal. And listen, the guy that was a rookie last year, Carson Wentz. At the end of all that, and I've talked to our boy and I talked to Mark Pike about it. Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator in Philadelphia, Carson Wentz's direct coach. And I asked him, I said, you know, tell me about him. And he goes, man, he is all of that and a bag of chips. He's got it. Carson Wentz is going to be a stud in this league for a long time, and he's going to be a guy that's going to get paid. So you got these guys up and coming. Carson Wentz is just 2 years or 1 year behind Derek Carr. He's going to get paid. So there's a whole list. I mean, you go down the list, you know all the names of all the quarterbacks. You probably need to be reminded of them. There's 32 of them. But at some point, the good ones are going to get rewarded, and they're going to change the salary cap future of their teams. And where their contracts fall is where the ladder.
And very quickly, because we do have to go to break, I'll give you one more guy who could very well be out on the market or up for trade after this year. Not that he's got as deep a resume as some of these other guys, but Mike Glennon. I mean, he signs the deal in Chicago, but they just drafted Mitchell Trubisky. How long is he going to sit by and watch Mike Glennon play? Glennon doesn't have a great year this year. He's out the door, and Trubisky's in the lineup. There's another guy that's out there on the market.
If Mike Glennon doesn't have a good September, he may sit down. Forget about the year. If he doesn't have a good September, he'll be on the market.
So not only are there three pretty good prospects that are expected to go in the first round in the draft in 2018, you could have upwards of five quarterbacks with playing time on their resume available for the right asking price, either via trade or as a free agent. So we'll talk about some of those scenarios as they could potentially unfold and make for a very good quarterback market next offseason in free agency. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to call to join us as Steve and I knock around quarterbacks. Mark Pike in our next hour as well. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network, sports update.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive. The new GM of the Buffalo Sabres continues to make changes to the team's front office and personnel department. Jason Bottrell has relieved Randy Cunningworth of his duties in the team's player development department. Cunningworth also had two stints as head coach of the Rochester Americans. The Sabres also parted ways with five members of their pro scouting department. NFL news, Colts quarterback Andrew Luck did not throw at all during any of the team's spring practices, coming off shoulder surgery to repair a labrum back in January. At his youth football camp this week, Luck confirmed he still has yet to throw a football as July fast approaches. Luck was quoted by the Indianapolis Star as saying, "It's going really well. It's feeling better and better every week. I still haven't started throwing, but that process will come when it's ready." Breaking NBA news, the LA Clippers have traded point guard Chris Paul to the Houston Rockets. No word yet on the compensation headed back to the Clips. The Knicks and their president of basketball operations, Phil Jackson, have agreed to part ways. Jackson came on board with high expectations in 2014 with 11 NBA titles to his credit as a player and coach. But the Knicks have been in a downward spiral since his arrival. During Jackson's tenure, the Knicks have gone a combined 80-166 with zero playoff appearances since the start of the 2014-2015 season. University of Florida won the College World Series, beating LSU. The school now has won national titles in football, basketball, and baseball. And the Bisons host the Red Wings again tonight. First pitch is at 7:05. That is your sports update here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Chris Brown along with Steve Tasker. And we're awaiting the appearance of one Mark Pike, who will be by around 1:15. So stay tuned for that as Steve and I catch up with him. Steve and Mark, teammates for the better part of 11 seasons with the Bills. So I'm sure we'll be taking a few trips down memory lane there in the not-too-distant future. But we are talking quarterbacks today with the big contract handed out to Derek Carr last week by the Raiders. 5 years, $125 million, a total of $70 million in guarantees in that contract, including $40 when he signed his name at the bottom of it. He's at the top of the league right now in terms of average annual salary at just a shade over $25 million. Who's next in line? How long is Carr going to be at the top of that list? Not very long, because it looks like at least a couple of quarterbacks, proven quarterbacks in this league, are going to be cashing in before the 2017 campaign gets underway in September. It's our Twitter poll as well, as we ask you to tell us who you think is going to get the next big deal. It's a dead heat right now between Matt Stafford and Marcus Mariota, each of them getting 32% of the vote on our Twitter poll. Kirk Cousins not far behind with 23% of the vote. And then we have other down there, which is going to include guys like Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Sam Bradford. Kirk Cousins is 23% of the vote. Everybody else getting 13% there.
One guy that we haven't spoken about is Aaron Rodgers, who, let's face it, he signed his last deal in 2013.
And it's up in 2020.
Right. So it was a long-term deal. And right now, I think his number is like $14 million a year.
No, it's more than that. It's 22.
22 a year, which is starting more and more to look
antiquated.
Yeah, antiquated. And no question, when you sign a guy to a deal that's that long term, that's when the club expects it to benefit them, when their guy is still playing well and he's underpaid and for his position. So that's where the Packers are. I would not think the Packers are going to touch Aaron Rodgers
for two years.
At this next year, I think through 18 they won't touch him. After 2018, then they'll start talking to him if he's still continuing to play well. They may push it to the limit. It may behoove them to do that.
He'll be 36 at the end of that deal.
Yeah, so they may roll the dice, hope that he declines a little bit at the end of it so they can get him for a little better buy. But I think the process in Green Bay is still this. They're going to get more and more benefit to his contract the longer it goes, and their object is to build a team around him that can go to and win the Super Bowl. They should be able to do it.
Now, here's the other interesting thing, and this is an approach that both the Titans and the Buccaneers are going to have to take with Winston and Mariota. The fifth-year option is on the table for each of those clubs. They could buy time, literally, by picking up the fifth-year option of each of those quarterbacks. Knowing what they've done in the league so far, and we're projecting here, granted, but
well,
Winston with the weapons he has, now Mariota has Eric Decker, the draft pick Corey Davis, Rashard Matthews, who had a breakout year last year at wideout. He's got one of the best young offensive lines in football. He's got two big hosses behind him in the backfield, and Derrick Henry and Murray. Both of those guys figure to have success this year. And what's the right move there for those clubs? Do you buy yourself time and do the fifth-year option, or do you say, screw it, this is our guy, let's give him big money now and show him we believe in him and we're going long-term and save ourselves down the road?
Yeah, and I get it, but the problem is that's what the Raiders did. I mean, Derek Carr was carrying that team. They looked like they were headed to the playoffs. They looked like they were, and they did. Once he went down, you know, they crushed. They tumbled. That's what the Raiders are doing. I mean, they're backing a guy who showed them through the regular season that he was good enough to win. Mariota, I mean, you got to think that he's done the exact same thing for Tennessee. Jameis Winston certainly is the guy in Tampa Bay. I mean, those guys should, you know, I mean, sure, their agents are pounding the table, said at least saying, you see this Derek Carr deal? They say two words, me too.
Well, and there's and here's the
that's key. That's the floor.
Here's the key, and here's what the agents are going to be pumping up when they step in the room. Andrew Luck signed before his fifth-year option year a big extension. So there's precedent there. And they're going to say, look, he was a number one pick in the draft. My guy's a number one pick in the draft. He's put up numbers, maybe not quite to the level of Andrew Luck, but do the right thing by our guy here. Sign him to an extension now. Don't give me any of this fifth-year option BS. You know that's where the
agents
come from.
Yeah, the agents can say that all they want, but the club can say, hey, listen, we're going to do what's best for us. And I get it. When it comes to it, we're going to do everything we can to take care of your client. But listen, you can they can take any tack they want. Say, listen, the owner in Indianapolis is a nut job. We're not going to do what he does. They run their organization the way they run it. We don't do that. That's not us. And that's, you know, they can negotiate that all they want to, but certainly you're right. The agents are not doing right by their guy unless they make that phone call and say, hey, listen, we'd like to just say, hey, listen, it's been done. Andrew Luck signed a big deal after his third year. We'd like to start talking about it. What do you guys think? Where are you sitting? And there'll be an inquiry like that. And they'll go from there, and then we'll see what happens. But, yeah, you're not a good agent unless you start talking to me day one after your contract is eligible to be negotiated.
Now I'm going to throw another log on the fire. CBA is up in 2020. Yeah. So if you're the Bucs or you're the Titans, you know.
That's
you
the back end of the contract.
Now you have – do you pick up the fifth-year option to wait and see what happens there? Or as a player – do you sit and wait and see?
As a player, yeah. That's what I was saying. As a player, the back end of my contract is 2020.
Right.
I want to see what it's like.
Because you're expecting better.
I expect better. I don't think the Players Association is going
to get back. Players didn't really win the last time.
No, they didn't. They did not. But I expect you know what, though? You think about it. There's a lot on the table here because what happens if they take another 8% hit in ratings on television?
The TV money is not going to be there.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to – that's a huge question. And
it's going to be very interesting to see how agents play it, which in many cases they say sit and wait because the money will always go up. We still see the cap going up $10, $12 million every year. But will it do that if the TV money's not there? It's not. It's not going to go up.
Right.
So then as an agent, I think you've got to sit there and reassess. – And we'll talk to Joel Corey in the next hour, a former agent, and this will be a question that we'll definitely pose to him to get his expertise on it as to just the way you even approach that stuff with the uncertainty of a new CBA and a negotiation and how that impacts your clients and what you can conceivably ask for, how much is the system going to get turned on its ear. I mean, they've operated this way since 2011. There's a running well-oiled machined model that these guys have been following in terms of knowing what to ask for, knowing what's realistic, where you can push the envelope in terms of total money, guaranteed money, all of those things. Now the script could be potentially flipped based on how negotiations go.
Here's what the
agents, based on that TV stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah, the agent is in a little different position than anybody else in the equation because what happens is there are relationships all over the league on both sides of the aisle. So the agents play that. The agents will go to the NFLPA, guys they used to represent, guys maybe they still do represent, say, hey, what's important to the PA this time around? And the PA say, listen, in this negotiation, we want this change, we want this change, we want this change. We want the pension change, we want the 401k plan change, we want the insurance change, whatever you want to say. And then they go. They've got relationships on the other side of the aisle with ownership. What's important to the owners? And the owners are kind of easier to read. They know because of the commissioner, and they'll say, hey, "Listen, what's important to the league is TV rights, ratings are down, or the new platforms that are out. They're live streaming. They're selling games to Google. They're selling games to Twitter. All that's on the table, and we need the players to be on board with that. So they're going to get what the issues are to both sides, and they're going to try and anticipate what the deal's going to be. without ever having it negotiated yet. And then they're going to decide whether they wait or whether they do the deal where it ends at 2020 mm-hmm. right before they negotiate it, or try and get it past that deal and let things settle before they do that.
I've gotten word that Mark Pike is delayed once again.
He's that guy.
Well, Jim Kelly's got a lot more pull than you and I, apparently, because he's still out there at the youth football camp. 2:15 is his new rescheduled time for our show.
Let's just bag that guy.
He missed the bus twice. This is like missing the school bus in the morning, man. But hopefully we'll get him on point in time.
Yeah, we apologize to those people who are waiting around for him, like we are.
Yeah. But you know, we're talking about these different scenarios, and there's a lot of moving parts here. Not only other quarterbacks who are going to be negotiating deals that, you know, agents are keeping their eyes on if they have a quarterback. For example, you know, Matt Ryan's going to probably be in line for an extension next year. I mean, he's going to be watching and seeing how these new deals unfold, whether it's Stafford long-term, Breeze short-term, Brady short-term, Bridgewater, Bradford, that debate there. Does Garoppolo go out in the market and sign for gigantic money? Blake Bortles is another guy. He's in a make-or-break year in Jacksonville. Now, is the market as in demand for a guy like Blake Bortles? Not right now. He's largely unproven, has been the victim of a lot of turnovers, had a down year last year. There are some people in the league that think his throwing mechanics were all off last year. Can he fix that, have a productive year, remain the guy in Jacksonville, or does he get released, and is he going to be out there and available? You've got Russell Wilson. Here's a guy whose contract runs through the 2019 season. He's going to be 31 at that point in time. The CBA is on the table, and you need to sign that guy to an extension. Do you now have to pay him more in average annual salary to get him to sign, knowing he may want to wait to see what happens with the CBA? You may have to overpay.
And if he waits, it's all on him too, because they'd have to franchise him, and he'd get a big number anyway for that last year before 2020 the negotiations start. This is, you know, this topic is, you know, it's complicated.
And there's a lot of layers.
Particularly when we're sitting here on the radio talking about them, people are trying to follow what we're saying about all these nuts and bolts about the CBA and these quarterback deals and when things are going to be up and the transition. And it's a very complicated situation. The bottom line is this. The quarterback is still the number one spot in the league, and there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to get thrown into a pot after this season, some of whom are very intriguing for teams like, well, you name it, that you can name the teams that don't have quarterbacks.
Right.
And who those guys, who's going to be available and who is not going to be available, plus this draft coming up a year from now or just less than a year from now, is supposedly a little bit quarterback rich. The Buffalo Bills have got 2 first-round draft picks. That looks really good for them.
Yeah.
And can they parlay that into maybe the first pick of the draft? Can they parlay that into getting one, maybe even 2 of those guys on their roster? Who knows? Or maybe they parlay it if Tyrod has a breakout year, maybe they get some help defensively. Maybe they get a premier pass rusher or defensive tackle or linebacker, you name it, or cornerback. Any of those things are in the table. All of that comes down to it all trickles down from the quarterback spot.
Right.
If you've got a guy that's playing well and you've got some assets that other people want, like the Patriots have Garoppolo, like we just mentioned with the Rams, or I'm sorry,
Minnesota.
The Minnesota Vikings with Teddy Bridgewater and Bradford.
Yeah.
This is a huge question, and it's gonna trickle down and have some ripple effects on rosters and marquee positions across the league.
And here's the other thing that could have a ripple effect too, because as all these guys come up, especially the proven guys. You know Aaron Rodgers, even at 36, is going to get signed for big money. Russell Wilson at 31 is going to make a ton of money.
Bradford is about to make a ton of money just within the next 12 months, I would imagine.
I mean, Cam Newton, provided his body holds up, he's going to cash in again also. Derek Carr, he's going to be 31 when his current contract that he just signed is up. He's going to cash in again with giant money.
Sam Bradford will be 33, 34 when his deal kicks in.
Right. So
if it's a four-year, five-year deal.
So here's the next question. When does the quarterback money become cost prohibitive to fielding the rest of your roster? When does it gobble up too much of the cap to accommodate the rest of your roster? It hasn't posed itself as a problem now because, as we've said, Cap's going up $10, $12 million a year. Quarterback salaries are inching up at a far slower rate than that. They're inching up, but they're not going up $10, $12 million a year in average annual salary.
Well, the percentage they're going up is whatever it is, and the quarterback probably is matching that. But it comes down to every team, even though all these teams are the same, they're all different. And they have their quarterback slotted in. You want to, that's the way the Patriots do it. They rank their players 1 to 53. They don't get outside the envelope.
Yeah.
The quarterback, I would think, is number one. Goes down from there. Through tight end, through center, through all the way down through 53. And whatever percentage of the salary cap they can set aside for you that year, that's what you're going to get. And that's what they use in free agency as well. And they say, listen, here's what we're going to pay you. Those guys may be paying you more, but if you want to come here and win, we'll be in the playoffs.
And we'll pay you
and
this.
And we will pay you this. And you got a chance at winning a ring. So how important is it to you to do that? They do not step outside the envelope. As you mentioned, Tom Brady's base salary is coming up as $1 million. Now, he's pulling down more than that, but that's what's on the cap. And that's the way they do business, and I think other teams are should follow suit. I mean, good grief. If you're going to copy somebody, copy that business model.
Right. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. If you've got an opinion on this in terms of where the quarterback salaries are going, are they getting too stupid now? I mean, I understand it's a quarterback-driven league. They're more important to your success on the field than maybe ever before, with everything so slanted towards the passing game. And finding a true franchise quarterback is harder than ever, as we discussed on the show yesterday, because the development, there's just no time. There's too much of a learning curve for college quarterbacks now in many cases, because the game is completely different there than it is in the NFL. And there's no developmental league to try to make up for that gap that exists between college and the pros. So you're really between a rock and a hard place in terms of nailing down a franchise quarterback and getting him on your roster. That's why the demand and the money is so high for these guys, because they're not a dime a dozen. They're a rarity. Even as Steve said in the last hour, you want to make more quarterbacks look good on the field in the NFL, make it wider. Yeah. Make the windows bigger so the accuracy doesn't have to be quite as precise on every single play.
They'll begin to, if it does get out of whack, whereas the quarterbacks are just too difficult to find, they're too exorbitant. Once you get one, you have to pay him so much to keep him that the roster around him isn't good enough to win with, so he gets no help. Because it is still, at its core, it's a team game, and one guy's not going to help. Now, certainly a quarterback does it, but that's the idea. You can bet that the league will evolve away and take some things off the plate of the quarterback, or more likely – will make the position that much easier to play. One of the ways to do that, as we were talking about, is widen the field and make the windows bigger, make more space, make it easier to find open guys. That will, you know, do a couple of things. One, it'll do what I said, make it easier to throw. It'll also put a premier on guys with stronger arms and more escapability. There'll be more space for him to move around. So that'll be on the table as well. But if it does get to the point and all these nuts and bolts and all these numbers that we're talking about, if the quarterback position gets to be too large a piece of the pie so that it's debilitating even when you do have one and when you don't have one, then the league will change something about it. Or, more likely, when the fans want something different, the league will give it to them, because that is the sacred cow for the National Football League. If the fans want something else from the game, the league will bend over backwards and jump through fiery hoops to give it to them.
I mean, they're already projecting the cap next year to be $180 million. Yeah. It's 167 right now.
I think it was
now.
54 back when it started. I was
thinking about that.
When I was in the league, it was when it began. I think it was like $54 million.
It's more than triple that now. That's just crazy.
Well, it's been a long time.
All right, but triple. I mean, that's a big number.
Well, listen, when Aaron Rodgers signed his deal in 2013, it was 123. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Seven-year deal.
It was a seven-year deal. And $123 million in 2013, that's what it was. So 4 years later, it's 180. That's $57
million. Added to the cap.
Over 3 years.
So it's
averaging $16 million a year. Yeah.
And that's why I don't think that the money being paid to quarterbacks will ever get to a point where – it's cost prohibitive in terms of filling out the rest of your roster. You may not be able to, and maybe Detroit is an example of this. Maybe they knew when they had to make a call on Ndamukong Suh, we're going to have to pay Matt Stafford in 2 years. We can't give Ndamukong Suh a $100-something million contract. It's just not going to fit because we got to keep the quarterback. How many teams are going to be able to do that? Raiders are a perfect example. You got Derek Carr just signing a $125 million deal. Khalil Mack's going to be up for an extension very soon with the way he's playing. I mean, he's quickly zoomed to the top of the list as maybe the premier pass rusher in the entire league. You're going to have to pay that guy to keep him. Can you make that work? Two giant salaries at two very important positions and still have a roster of not just bodies and guys. I mean, can you make that work? Because, you know, you look at Carr, he's 25 a year. You've got, I mean, I can look it up, but you got to look at the top defensive end salary. That's somewhere around at least 16. I'm thinking maybe even a little more than that, 16 to 17 million a year. I could be a little off. I can't remember these positions by heart. I'm trying to remember the franchise tag for defensive ends, and I don't have it in front of me right now. But let's just say it is. So right off the bat, you're talking $41 million for two guys in one calendar year, just in terms of average salary. And with bonuses, it could be even fatter. So that's not going to be an easy row to hoe. It's a decision that you know what you want to do, but fiscally, can you make that happen and do it without compromising the rest of your roster and leaving yourself vulnerable in other areas on the field? I mean, it is, as everybody says, the ultimate team sport. And while if you have a dominant pass rusher and you have a great quarterback, that can take you a long way. But there's still 20 other positions on the field total on either side of the ball.
Yeah, you know, it's all about the money, because you look at the top defender in the league is Fletcher Cox, averaging $17.1 million a year. Listen, 4 years ago, that was a quarterback salary.
Right.
So it's about the league is about the quarterback and getting after the quarterback. Defense and offense are no longer about run and stop the run. Defense is about getting after the quarterback and creating turnovers. And offense is about getting a quarterback and airing it out. And that's why, you know, as good as the Bills were on the ground the last two or three years, they led the league rushing. You know, they're an 8-8, 500 club at best. And that's, you got to have more. You got to have more.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to hop on board. We're talking about the next quarterback in line to get paid big time. But if you have any other thoughts on where this market is going, feel free to chime in. Tom on a cell, hang on. We'll get to you first on the other side of the break. This is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. From One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on the John Murphy Show as we head into the second half of hour number two of the program, talking quarterback contracts and where it's all headed. Derek Carr getting a big money deal last week. More guys are going to be lining up before September rolls around, namely Matthew Stafford and a couple of others. At 803-0550, we're asking you to chime in. Let us know what you think of where these contracts are headed, if it's getting out of hand, or if the quarterback position is in such demand with not a whole lot of supply that it's just going to keep going the way it's going. 803-0550, as promised, we lead off with Tom on the west side. Tom, you're on. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Steve, I don't mean to inflate your ego any more than it is already, but if I had a vote, you and Darryl would both be in the Hall of Fame. But anyway, I digress. Back in the old days, the old AFL, NFL, those guys had to work winter jobs. They had to get a 9-to-5 when they weren't getting paid for football because they didn't make any money. I think all these salaries for all these positional players are getting way out of line. A lot of guys, they get the big ticket and then they shut it down. They don't earn the money they're being paid. The NFL should structure a schedule where positional players have a cap, and you can't spend more than what the NFL sets for each position. Now, if they want to make it across the board, then if you don't have the quarterback, but you have the defensive end could be paid what the quarterback wants to get paid until you get your quarterback. But then you got to step down in the defensive end. That way, nobody gets paid, and there's no animosity in the locker room because nobody's getting overpaid. Nobody is stealing more from the pocketbook than the other guy to say, hey, you got to take a pay cut because we got to pay him.
Well, that would happen automatically under your system. I get you, Tom. I understand your point, but here's what would happen. The moment Ndamukong Suh saw that the Miami Dolphins got a new quarterback and he was playing really well, that meant Ndamukong Suh was going to have to take a pay cut because now they did have their quarterback, and now there's animosity in the locker room because I'm going to take that quarterback that's starting to play really well is going to take all of my money. And that's automatically going to cause some problems.
Right. And maybe you, as a team with an established franchise quarterback, can't get a top-flight pass rusher in free agency because of the situation that Tom was setting up there, because that guy's going to continue to get all the money. You can't offer that guy maybe as much under Tom's system. You know, you already have a system of checks and balances in place in terms of limits.
Yeah,
on
it's a salary cap.
It's the salary cap, and to a secondary extent, the franchise and transition tags for each position. Now, granted, it's for the best of the best at each position. It's the average of the top five for franchise tag and average of the top ten for the transition tag.
It doesn't have to be the best of those positions. All it has to do is for a team to say,
our
guy will give that to our guy.
Fair enough. But still in all, it's a device that's in place to try to at least hold the line on what the ceiling should be for players at specific positions.
I get what Tom's saying, though. You sit back and you think about everything that's going on, and you're right. I played with guys who – now, I was. That's not really true. I played with at a time when guys who were older in their career when I got in as a rookie I was 1985, so it was forever ago. I played with old players who had to get jobs early in their career in the offseason, who had to start – thinking about what they were going to do and that kind of thing. That ceased to be a problem when I got in the league because guys were starting to make six figures pretty regularly. I almost did when I was a rookie. I didn't. But it took me 3 years to get to the point where I was making six figures. But as a kid like me, I could live on that, and I didn't have to get a regular job.
Yeah.
So we could start spending 12 months a year getting ready to play the next season. We didn't have to wait till training camp to get in shape and that kind of thing. So the league evolved away from it. And I get now it's hard for the rest of us to see these guys sign these contracts that are, and I call them life changers. That second contract is 8 or 9 digits. You know, I mean, it's big. And if you sign a deal like that, your life changes forever. And so it's hard for radio stiffs like us working to get my mind or your mind around it. And it's hard to say, why are they even negotiating this? Listen, the differences in these contracts in themselves are life changers. I mean, the difference between the number 3 defensive end and the number 1 defensive end on a team is life changing money. So even though the guy's got, that's what we're talking about. So these negotiations go long and hard, and these guys are getting every penny they can because, A, they feel like they deserve it because they're risking life and limb, and, B, they don't know if it'll be there tomorrow because they could get in a fender bender with somebody and twist their knee, and now they don't get anything.
Right.
So it's hard to begrudge them the money. I don't. I'm an old player, and you can always hear these bitter old guys going, I can't believe the money these young guys are making. I can't believe how they that was never the way we did it. You know, we had to get second jobs, like Tom was just saying, the caller. I don't begrudge these guys their money. I took the money I made. I signed the deals I signed, and I was happy to do it. And I think these guys should be as well. Listen, make it while you can make it, because life's short, and that's the way the league is. It's grown and grown.
Life's short, and NFL careers are even shorter.
Yeah.
So, look, we're talking about quarterbacks and these guys making big money. There were two former quarterbacks who are out on a field, I believe down in Miami, and they're playing a whole different kind of football right now, and it's names you'll recognize, but flag football with some former NFL players happened this week, and I don't know how many people were in attendance, but it was in a major stadium, and you had some pretty big names there. Michael Vick was playing quarterback, Jimmy Clausen, the former Notre Dame quarterback, and backup for Carolina for a little while and a couple other places. They were the quarterbacks in this game. You had T.O. there, Chad Ochocinco or Chad Johnson, whichever he goes by now. You had a bunch of players playing this flag football on a regulation field. They had players mic'd up, the whole thing. They had the suspended camera over the field shooting things. And
they were playing at a soccer field in Florida. It was pretty serious. I mean, they had some guys.
Flag football.
Yeah, it was flag football. And they were slinging around. I don't know that I would sit down in an afternoon and go tailgate or even sit down and watch it, although, you know, maybe I would for a minute to see if it was intriguing. I don't know how fast the game moved or what they're allowed to do, but when you've got guys like this who want to play, you know, they'll find a way to do it. And I'll tell you what, flag football's it's less taxing than tackle football, I know that.
It's the American Flag Football League. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, is it going to get traction? I don't know.
Well, listen, anytime you couple the name football with a sport, people are going to check it out in this country.
So it's a novelty at the very least right now. And people are familiar with what flag football is.
Listen, you've got women's tackle football going on. You've got men's flag football. Remember back in the day when you had the WFL, the USFL, the NFL Europe. So it's a sport that has a lot of traction in this country for sure. So anyway, there are other smaller entities that can kind of chip away at that pie. They're going to try and do it, and this is one more way they can do it. This flag football league, you guys like Mike Vick, Terrell Owens being a part of it. Yeah, people are going
to come and watch.
People will see. They'll want to check it out at least. They'll get some eyes on the sport early on.
It's clearly a league where you got to have some athletes, but it's just crazy to see these guys running around playing flag football after playing in the NFL. I just wonder what it does, what has to happen to convince them to get out there, you know, and play. I know a lot of those guys that have played at the highest level are competitors, and so anytime there's an opportunity to compete, you know, they can probably be very easily talked into it. But at the same time, I'm thinking, like, what are we doing now?
Listen, they obviously did not play long enough, none of those guys. Because I played plenty long enough. Because when I said goodbye, I haven't run a step since in the 20 years since. I was so done with football that I didn't want anything to do with it. I mean, I like talking about it and watching it, but getting out there and competing against those guys, I could not be further away.
You don't miss the aches.
Could not be
pains.
Further away.
Because I'm telling you, you got to believe that even though there was very limited contact, at least in the footage that was airing on MSG with this American Flag Football League, you got to believe some of these guys are still sore the next day, even though they're not banging on each other and they're not in pads.
Well,
they're just grabbing flags.
Here's the thing. I mean, for me, it wasn't about, you know, strapping it on and playing hard for 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon. I'd do that for nothing. What I was getting paid for was in March, April, and May, and then Monday through Saturday, getting ready to play. You know, you had to train hard to get ready to play. You got to get ready. You got to get, you know, you got to put a lot of time in, watch film, put in a game plan, practice it, lift, run, sleep, eat, lift, run again, get on the practice field again. I mean, it was constant training and conditioning. I mean, that's what I felt like I was getting paid for. Sunday afternoon was a bonus. And to have these guys, I don't know what they had to do to get ready, but if they had to do anything, it was more than I want any part of.
Amen to that. The other thing that we wanted to get into a little bit was, you know, yesterday on the show we were talking about how part of the reason there's a quarterback development problem is because to fill the gap between the college and the pro game, there really is no developmental league. The contracts in the CFL are pretty ironclad. It's hard to pry guys out of the CFL and just drop them on an NFL roster. You don't have NFL Europe anymore. But it's interesting to see that NFL scouts are scouting the Canadian game a lot, looking for quarterbacks with playing experience and things of that nature. And you got the kid that plays in Calgary, Bo Levi Mitchell, who would still like to play in the NFL at some point in time, but he's still got 2 years left on his CFL contract. Now, I'm not going to pretend to know all the rules between the CFL and the NFL. I've never really read those to any great degree, and whether somebody could buy out a contract or a team could offer them something to get the rights to this guy. I would think you could get anything for a price. But still in all, I mean, this is a kid that played at Hawaii and SMU, then ended up transferring to Eastern Washington after he got hurt at SMU and lost his starting job, and then winds up in the CFL and is doing really well. I mean, he got the most outstanding player award.
Yeah.
And now NFL scouts are hot on his tail. Texas kid, so you know he was born and raised on football.
Yeah, there's a ratio in the CFL where a large percentage of your roster has to be Canadian players. The other half, obviously, is made up of
largely American,
American players, guys who played Division I sports and want to get back in the NFL, or who didn't quite make it in the NFL. Like my kid Luke was in camp with the Chargers. A week after he got released, he's up in Canada playing. Yeah. He's been there. This is his fifth year. So a lot of guys like that. But once you sign a deal with the Canadian Football League, you're bound to them for the duration of that contract,
yeah,
unless a deal can be struck. There has been some contention over the years with a guy here, a guy there, who wanted out of that contract, and the club didn't want to let him out. But unless the club in Canada is willing to say, okay, go, or you have a clause in that contract that they're willing to sign that says you can, if you get a call, you're stuck in Canada. And that's where you're going to stay for the time being.
So the regular season up there is 10?
Week one was last weekend.
Right.
And
but
it
it's
goes,
a 10-week regular season?
No, 18 games.
Oh, it's 18.
There's 18 games regular season in Canada, and then the playoffs, the Grey Cup is always on United States Thanksgiving weekend.
Okay. So this kid, in his first year as a starter for Calgary, goes 12-1 as a starter, throws for almost 5,400 yards. Now, is the yardage a little inflated up there?
Absolutely, except for one thing. It's a wider field. They throw the football on almost every down, but it's only three down football, first down, second down, and then punt. And you've got to stay on the field, and the way to do it's 1st and 10, 2nd and 5, that kind of thing. So you got it's 1st and 10, but when you get to 3rd down, that's it. I mean, you gotta either punt it away or try and pick it up. So it's limited in that respect.
Right, and he's only 6 feet tall, so on a wider field, bigger throwing lanes, the height isn't as critical at the quarterback position if you got to make plays from the pocket. And if you can roll out, there's a lot more room to roll out, too, up there.
In my experience watching guys up there, you've got some pretty good quarterbacks up there, guys that can play. But the difference is, generally speaking, they're shorter.
And they can be.
They can be, and if they've got a strong arm, because the field's bigger, they got to make all the throws.
That's a good point.
They've got to make all the throws. And people always ask me, because they hear me talking like this on the radio about the CFL, are there guys up there that could play in the NFL? And I said, yeah, there are. Particularly, though, for me, not guys like Levi Mitchell, it's more guys on the defensive side. Because the field is so big, you've got guys up there that can really tackle in space. You know, they don't miss.
Not a lot of help out there.
Yeah, that's right. And so you get guys that can really cover it. There's a defensive back playing for the New Orleans Saints called, I can't remember his first name, Bro is his last name.
Oh, yeah, Delvin Bro.
Delvin Bro. He was an elite corner in the CFL, and now he's a pretty good corner. He's starting corner for the Saints. Good tackler in space.
Yeah.
Because you got to be. And so there are things that the CFL accentuates and highlights that do play well in the NFL. And no, make no mistake, the NFL, with all of its money and all of its power and all of its thoroughness, they do watch the CFL very closely for players and guys who could help them win.
Yeah, and this kid Mitchell will be 29 when his current CFL contract is up.
Cameron Wake played in the CFL.
Right, and didn't get to the NFL until he was 28.
That's right. So there are guys.
Joe Theismann got here, I think, when he was 29.
Doug Flutie's a great – we've been talking about quarterbacks all day. Doug Flutie had a lot to prove. Warren Moon was the first guy who was actually – came in as a free agent who, you know, made $1 million for the Houston Oilers and, you know, ultimately ended up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and rightfully so. But he had to wait because, you know, he was a black quarterback. And, I mean, that wasn't that long ago. It was in the early 80s. And to this very day – they do documentaries about how he was mistreated by the NFL and just misunderstood and not given the opportunity strictly because he was a black, an African-American quarterback. What a great dude he is and what a great man he's been. He's a treasure to the game and to everybody for what he persevered through to carve out a Hall of Fame career for himself. But that was a different reason to begin with.
803-0550 to join us. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. More to discuss on the other side here on the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we close in on the end of hour number two of the program here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. And Steve and I, earlier this hour, were talking about how it might be difficult for the Raiders to find a way to pay Derek Carr, which they've done, while also paying Khalil Mack, who's going to be up for a new contract relatively soon. I'm kind of inclined to think they're not going to want to go to that fifth-year option and just sign him to a long-term extension to try to spread out the money. Are they going to be able to do that? The top of the scale right now, which I took a stab at and was pretty much on the money with, was $17 million a year for defensive ends, right?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
So it's moving up from there. So by the time Mac's on the table for a deal, it's probably going to be somewhere between 18 and 19, maybe even pushing 20 a year.
Yeah, I said earlier, too, that Fletcher Cox was the highest-paid defender. It's Von Miller. He gets a base salary of $17 million. That's the base salary top defender.
Right.
Now, the average, Fletcher Cox might be there at 17.1, but Fletcher Cox is definitely the highest paid defensive tackle
right
in the league. But that's what you're talking about. We're talking about how out of whack the quarterback salaries are. Well, now you got, you know, defenders like J.J. Watt. They're creeping up. They're creeping up particularly, and I think it's a good sign for the league that other players are starting to break that bank, but it's also a sign that the game is evolving a little bit past the quarterback position. And we said earlier the game has evolved to the point where it's no longer run and stop the run. It's throw it and get after the passer defensively. Get after the passer, sack the quarterback, and create turnovers. And that's what defense is about in the NFL now.
But here's the thing. You've got the cap next year projected at 180, and if you pay Khalil Mack a contract that's somewhere near $20 million a year in a couple of years, that's 25% of your cap for Derek Carr and Khalil Mack. Can you make that work? I'm not a salary cap expert, but that seems like an awful lot of money invested in just two guys at two important positions, but still in all, pretty tough. We've got a break because we're getting to the top of the hour here. Steve and I will be back on the other side when we talk to CBS Sports' Joel Corey, former NFL agent, to get his expertise on where all of this is going with these quarterback deals, if it's healthy for the league, and then secondarily, what other things could impact these quarterback contracts in the future, like the upcoming CBA, which expires in 2020. It's on the other side here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Your sports update from One Bills Drive. The new GM of the Buffalo Sabres is making changes to the team's front office and personnel departments. Jason Bottrell has relieved Randy Cunningworth of his duties in the team's player development department. Cunningworth also had two stints as head coach of the Rochester Americans. The Sabres also parted ways with five members of their pro scouting department. NFL news, Colts quarterback Andrew Luck did not throw at all during any of the team's spring practices, coming off shoulder surgery to repair a labrum back in January. At his youth football camp this week, Luck confirmed he still has yet to throw a football as July fast approaches. Luck was quoted by the Indianapolis Star saying, "It's going really well. It's feeling better and better every week. I still haven't started throwing, but that process will come when it's ready," end quote. NBA news, reports indicate the LA Clippers have put themselves in position to trade point guard Chris Paul to the Houston Rockets. The package reportedly includes guards Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams, along with forward Sam Decker, going from the Rockets to the Clippers, along with a 2018 first-round pick for the 32-year-old point guard in Chris Paul. Other NBA news, the Knicks and their president of basketball operations, Phil Jackson, have agreed to part ways. Jackson came on board with high expectations in 2014 with 11 NBA titles to his credit as a player and a coach in the league. But the Knicks have been in a downward spiral since his arrival. During Jackson's tenure, the Knicks have gone a combined 80 and 166 with no playoff appearances since the start of the 2014-2015 season. And the Bisons host the Red Wings again tonight. First pitch is at 7:05. That is your sports update from One Bills Drive. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. And Steve Tasker and Chris Brown with you, and we've been talking a lot about these quarterback contracts and where they're headed. Derek Carr, the latest to top the league at just over $25 million a year after signing a five-year, $125 million deal just last week. And joining us on the line to talk a little bit more about this is CBS Sports' Joel Corey, who also is a former agent. Joel, thanks for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. We appreciate you taking some time, lending some expertise. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing all right. I guess the first question is, how long is Derek Carr going to be sitting atop the league with the highest average salary at the quarterback position? 2 weeks? A month? I mean, it's coming soon where other guys are going to be getting paid as well, right?
Potentially, his reign's going to last a month, depending upon whether Kirk Cousins signs a deal or plays on his franchise tag. But the ink's barely going to be dry on the contract before Matthew Stafford becomes the new highest-paid player in the NFL. This deal Derek Carr signed at $25 million a year is just a floor, starting point for Matthew Stafford.
And now, he's 29 years old, Stafford is. You know, Carr's a little bit younger than him. That has no impact because, I mean, Stafford conceivably, provided he stays healthy, can play another 7-8 years, no problem.
Matthew Stafford potentially could retire as the NFL career earnings king, depending upon how he plays this contract in terms of length. He's one of the last guys that got a contract as the number one pick before the rookie wage scale, then signed what I call a bridge extension, 3 years extension. He's only going to play two years and get a new contract this year. If he does a shorter-term deal, no more than 5 years, he's got one more contract left in him. So he could potentially be a guy who earns $300 million in his career, Matthew Stafford.
How really urgent, Joel, do you think that the Detroit Lions – take the fact that they've got to sign this guy? He's 29. I mean, he seems like he's been in the league. He came out very early. Remember, he's like 20 years old when he came out. He's been in the league a long time, and as you said, he signed a couple of very nice deals already. How urgently and how big a priority is it for Detroit? Do they want to get this done now, or are they willing to, like, franchise him, transition him, all of those other tags they can put on him?
They want to get it done now. Their president, Rod Wood, said something which boggled my mind last week. Whenever a team exec would say something favorable about a client I represented, I would print it out, file it away. And this guy said, we're willing to do whatever it takes to sign Matthew Stafford and keep him in Detroit. That's music to Tom Condon's ears. So Tom Condon never does team-friendly deals anyway. He's a prominent quarterback agent, represented both Mannings, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan. So he now is doing cartwheels over language like that, because if you don't sign him now and you have him play out the year, because of where his salary is this year in cap number, it's $26.4 million to franchise him next year. And if you play that franchise tag game, it's over $31.5 million to do it again. So given their urgency and who Tom Condon is, I wouldn't be surprised if he at some point threw out, okay, two franchise tags, averages $29 million a year. You want him that badly? That's what we have to do. I don't think the deal's going to come in there. But Matthew Stafford is sitting in the driver's seat after proving that he could thrive losing his security blanket, Calvin Johnson, last year.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you have to talk about as well is you can the average number, like you're talking about $29 million, it sounds like a lot. But I think more and more the players, particularly a guy like Stafford, who's 29, which is young for a quarterback, nevertheless, it's all about the guaranteed money. If they can get a larger percent of a smaller contract guaranteed, that may entice Stafford to sign a better deal for the club.
If you could ever get someone with a fully guaranteed contract, that would really take place, because the theory would be that if you got a fully guaranteed contract, you would be giving on the overall dollars and average for the certainty. But since I don't think anyone's going to do that, owners kind of draw the line at the guaranteed contract in the NFL. that he's going to try to advance the ball over what is the standard for the most money guaranteed at signing, which is not a quarterback. It's Ndamukong Suh at almost $60 million fully guaranteed at signing. Andrew Luck tops quarterbacks at $47 million. So I look for him to try to top that metric in terms of overall guarantees. It's $87 million for Andrew Luck. So I expect Stafford to try to advance the ball in those two metrics and also in terms of your cash flow, because if you – since it's not a fully guaranteed contract, you want more money sooner rather than later, not backloaded. So you want your contract to be front-loaded. So those are the things structurally that I expect Stafford and Tom Condon to try to accomplish.
Talking to Joel Corey from CBS Sports, a salary cap expert and NFL contract expert. You know, you look at some of the difficult, maybe the more tricky situations, Joel, with respect to quarterbacks. One is going on in New England, and somebody might say, well, what's so difficult about it? And the other one's in Minnesota, because you've got two teams with the top two quarterbacks on their depth charts, both with contracts coming up here. I think the situation in New England is kind of tricky because Brady is 40. I know he wants to play six or seven more years, but history says the deterioration is coming at some point. I don't care what kind of fountain of youth he's dealing with. And you got Garoppolo in the last year of his deal. Has that ship sailed with Garoppolo? He's just not going to sign anything that the Patriots put in front of him and go get on the market and try to find a starting job, even if Brady signs as little as a one-year extension. How do you see that scenario playing out, both from maybe the Patriots' perspective and maybe more importantly Garoppolo's perspective?
Well, New England typically has a philosophy that it's better to get rid of a player a year too early rather than a year too late. The only person that's probably not going to apply to is Tom Brady. But at the same time, Father Time is undefeated. He is getting up there at the standpoint where quarterbacks fall off of a cliff. I don't think there's ever been a quarterback at 41 to be selected to an all-pro team. I think Favre at 40 had a great year, and then year 41, the wheels fell off and he retired. So I wouldn't touch Brady's contract, wouldn't extend it. I'd go year to year with him. It runs through the 2019 year. The interesting dynamic with Garoppolo and Brady is they're both represented by the same firm, Yee and Dubin. So Garoppolo's representatives may have a better idea from the shared representation of what Brady's actual plans are. You know, his wife wants him to retire. She's spilling the beans about him having concussions, which weren't reported. So who knows? Maybe they win another Super Bowl, he rides off into the sunset, or if Father Time catches up with him, then they may be inclined to make the switch next year, which would be a tough thing to do, but at least from a PR standpoint, not if Brady's starting to decline. But the only thing I would do if I'm Garoppolo, if I wanted to delay being a starting quarterback, is the option that's been thrown around is they could franchise him next year for basically $23.5 million, like they did Matt Castle a few years ago. They traded Castle. But if they're not really that enamored with Jacoby Brissett or don't think he could be the backup, then you could delay it for a year, the decision. Franchise him for $23.5 million.
Franchise and a backup quarterback.
That's a radical idea. That's been thrown out. You could either franchise him and try to trade him and get less than the two first-round picks as compensation.
Yeah.
Or they have enough cap room where they could carry it, and that would be – the idea. If you want me to do an extension for Garoppolo and I'm the agent, I'm saying it's got to be something close to that franchise tag number. Give me $10 million, half of it, a third of it as a signing bonus now so you get the cap hit over 2 years, and I'll do it. But, yeah, he's got a good shot of hitting the open market next year and probably getting a contract like Brock Osweiler got.
And then what about
go ahead.
And then what about the Vikings situation, Joel? It's obviously tied to Bridgewater's health, but if Bradford is the starter going into the year, Bridgewater's still not ready, still not fully cleared from the knee, and Bradford goes out and has another nice season. He's only 29 years old at the end of this year. Do you hitch your wagon to him, or do you still bank on the potential of Bridgewater if you know for sure he's going to get a clean bill of health for 2018?
Well, the thing is, they didn't pick up the fifth-year option on Bridgewater, so he's going to be a UFA. So they could be caught with no quarterbacks. If Bradford does what he did last year, since there aren't enough quarterbacks to go around in terms of the number of teams that demand exceeds supply, they'd probably franchise him just to restrict his rights for a year. Even if they think Bridgewater could be the guy, try to re-sign Bridgewater to a incentive-laden deal. Since he hasn't played, you could have a lot of not likely earned incentives. They may delay the situation for a year. But Bradford's in an interesting situation because if Mike Glennon can never really throw a pass and sign a what could be a one-year deal for $18 million or a three-year deal at $45 million with no resume, and you rarely see a decent or good quarterback hit the open market, Sam Bradford could get a very strong deal if he becomes a unrestricted free agent next year.
Well, Joel, listen, we thank you much for lending some expertise to this conversation here. It just seems like everything in the NFL, the cost of doing business is going up. I kind of was of the opinion that maybe some of these guys in these quarterback decision teams, like New England and Minnesota, might be putting guys out on the market. But franchise tags for backups, a crazy notion, but you're saying it's possible, and we appreciate you kind of lending some expertise to the conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Sure, thanks for having me.
All right, that's Joel Corey from CBS Sports and a former agent, NFL salary cap expert, contract expert, and that's crazy to think about. You know, the fact that you, here last hour we're thinking, well, you can get up to four guys that might be out on the market. Cousins, Garoppolo, Bridgewater, Alex Smith, Glennon.
Yeah, the Patriots.
He's of the opinion that these teams are going to restrict their maneuverability.
Yeah, the Patriots are a team that thinks outside the box, so it wouldn't surprise me to see them be the first ones to franchise tag a backup quarterback, particularly when Tom Brady has done the things he's done with his contract over the past 4 or 5 years. It's more likely with the Patriots than anybody else.
Right. And they, I still think you've got the cap room to carry.
Yeah, I still think it's nuts.
I do, too. Backup quarterback franchise tag.
Right. You're paying a guy $23 million to sit.
Yeah. Must be nice.
That's
speaking
good
of
business,
sitting, we've got to welcome in a guest at this time. One Mark Pike ready to roll here and come on in. He's been in the green room for quite a while.
Look at you wearing a whistle.
But helping Jim Kelly with his Jim Kelly Youth Football Camp, and a big hug for his former teammate as well. Mark, we're glad we finally got you in here. We were worried.
Yeah, we were worried about you. Supposed to be in here 2 hours ago. I didn't know if you knew that.
I ate two lunches.
So good to have you. Good to see you.
Thank you.
You know, I know you're still you're a busy man. You're a mogul now, according to Steve. You're like a business mogul out there with all the things you got going on in the hopper right now. Yeah, it's going pretty well for you, though, right?
I work hard every day, you know.
Mark Pike is the Ron Swanson.
Has anything changed? He's just, you're the Ron Swanson. Nice. I'd be more impressed if you could grow that mustache.
Yeah.
That would be more impressive. So how you doing? You doing all right?
I'm doing great. I'm spending the week at Jim Kelly's lodge. That has been interesting. Yes, it has.
He could have stayed at my house.
We're in the blonde fox room.
Yeah, there you go.
Me and Zeke, yeah.
Yeah, Jim's got a nice little, a quaint little small hunting cabin in Ellicottville.
Yeah. It's a chalet.
That would sleep our entire team.
It's a chalet.
Yeah. You didn't even call me to tell me you were coming in town. I knew you were coming in.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're never here. You're always on the road traveling, you know. I don't know, dude. Like,
every time I'm in Cincinnati, I call you.
I know you do. You do.
He does take the call as well. I will say that.
Yes, yeah.
I do. No, it's been. Yeah, I got my.
Give me about that. What are you? Are you just like you just rooting these kids on, giving them some?
No, man. I'm D line coaching, man. Like,
nice.
Yeah, Zeke and I. My son Zeke came down, and we've been working the camp. He works with quarterbacks, and I'm working with the D line. It's been interesting.
Has any of them asked you if you ever played football at all?
I had to tell them.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah, they can figure it out. Yeah, I had to tell them. Yeah.
Well, we talk about the age of these kids now. We were joking with Jim. We had Jim on set yesterday, and we were joking with him because he's telling me he's got grandkids from the first group of kids that came through in 87. Yeah. You know, here we are 30 years later, and he's starting to get some grandkids of the first campers he ever had.
It's strange. I just spoke. They have the chalk talk. That's the they have speakers. Zeke just spoke to the juniors, the seniors, and the juniors. And I spoke to the youth, the bantams, they call them.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're first, second, third graders.
He's got veteran counselors that weren't born when this thing started.
Yeah, no clue. And I'm like telling them they had no clue who I am.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people out there, at least in Buffalo, who know who you are. And I told Steve, you know, you guys want to get out in the field house. I'm a former soccer player. I'll punt for you if you want to go run and cover something.
I told him if he – I told him,
I think we should go out and have a and run the 40, me and Steve. I'm going to see if I can beat him.
Ooh. I don't think I could make it.
Who was faster when you were playing? He had
what
you, right?
Are you, what?
He had you, right?
Who, what?
See, I knew I could strike it.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
I weighed 270.
Yeah.
I beat him by a step.
By a step. So, I mean, so refresh my memory, Mark, just in terms of where you would line up in the formation on punt coverage. Because obviously Steve was a gunner, and, you know, he's out there and easy to spot. You're kind of tighter on the formation,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
were you?
Well, on punt, you know, Steve was a gunner. That's outside, and he was out there getting his brains kicked in, usually by two guys.
So. Everybody gets their brains kicked in.
And, no, I was inside. I was next to the center. I was next to Adam Langer.
That's what I thought.
And so I was inside protector, and I covered down the middle of the field. And,
We had,
you know,
it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I loved covering punts.
Yeah, like we had with our good friend Bruce DeHaven, who was brilliant and at dissecting film. And
Jim Kelly he's blowing my phone up, man.
Where are you?
Jim wants to know, where are you? Is he getting you because he wants to know where you are?
I don't know.
So Mark Pike's taking texts while we're on the radio. Anyway, the story I always tell about Mark was we were playing the Indianapolis Colts in the RCA Dome back before they had the Lucas Oil Field. And they had a punt returner named Clarence Verdan, who was very dangerous. And he had a penchant for going sideways, backwards, and running around like like one of those guys.
Like a joystick,
And then finding a way to get 25 or maybe bust it for a touchdown. So we were really concerned about that. We actually would think, okay, we want him to go sideways because we had a lot of faith in our ability to cover. And Bruce said, listen, if you get down there, talking to me and Chris Hale or whoever the other gunner might have been, go get to the middle of the field, make him go sideways. We wanted him to go sideways.
Did you give him an outside lane?
Because he'd go backwards.
Okay.
And we knew with our discipline.
That seems to run counterintuitive.
Well, it did. And we would do that, and we would get him to run, because then he'd go backwards. Because we had a lot of faith in our ability to be disciplined and not give him that.
Okay.
So sure enough, we're running down, and I cut hard to the inside, and he catches it. And I kind of take my shot at him, and I missed him. And then our discipline took hold, and he was trying to dance around and trying to make something happen. And big boy Mark came in. I'll never forget it because I was, you know, I whiffed, and I'm like skidding on my face mask. I turn around and look, and he jumps sideways, and Pike gets both arms around both of his arms.
Clean shot.
And gets him. He didn't hit him. He just kind of grabbed him and then tent staked him, meaning he suplexed him upside down and then – put his head into the ground. We didn't see Clarence the rest of the day.
Clarence Verdan.
Yeah, wow. We didn't see CNN the rest of the day.
Is that your – would you
the call that? Our classic – one of my great memories.
All right, we'll let you
cover.
Do that, then I want to know if that's your best hit of your career.
Okay. No.
I
saw
it. I had a good one.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about that. But one of my great memories of me and Steve playing, and I really can't remember who we were playing. I don't know if it was Kansas City. I know we were at home, and it was the time we both knocked each other out.
So you both whiffed.
We both got the wind knocked. We hit each other, and we're both laying on the field. They had to come out. They had to come out and get us both.
That's right.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what Bud said.
And Bruce,
when
it wasn't
he got
Bud.
Out there.
It wasn't Bud. It was Bruce. Bruce DeHaven was like, man,
I lost them both on one play. Bruce we hit each other.
Yeah, his two guys that he, you know, the linchpins of the special team got both on all four. You know, punt, return, kickoff, return. Well, we were. Bruce, that's
and we not we
goes,
knocked the wind out of each other. Like, I mean, you ever had the wind knocked out of you, like in your suplex? It's like you think you're dead. Like you are going
to
die.
We actually, you felt like you had to get better in order to pass away. So I remember that.
Yeah.
And I remember because after that, we were sitting over there. After you catch your breath, you're kind of laughing, going, "Man, that hurt." He goes, "What were you thinking?" Yeah. I was thinking this. And Bruce comes over. He goes, "You guys okay?"
Yeah. No, my best hit ever.
It was really honestly probably the
hit that kind of helped me stick around for a long time was against the Pittsburgh Steelers at home, Dwight Stone. It was in my third year, and I'm a struggling player, trying to stay on the team. And I got thrown out on the kickoff.
86 or 87?
It would have been. I think it was 87. think it would have been 87 because I
86 was your first year.
It was my first year. I was on injured reserve most of the year.
And 87 was Bruce's first year.
That's right.
As special teams coach.
Right. He threw me out there. Right. We were playing Pittsburgh. And it just – it was one of those hits. Like, you know, I'm running just full speed. Got no ability to stop at the time.
No cutting happening
he
here.
He cut back into me, and I absolutely
– labeled him.
Annihilated him. It was like the death shot of all death shots. And I just, like, I got up, like, and I went – I was, like, right on our sideline – at the 20-yard line, and I just went – I got up, and I just went to the fans like this, and they went crazy. And I was like, this is awesome.
So that's number one.
And then Cornelius Bennett had a show. He had a radio show, and every week he would give the hitter of the week, I think they called it. He'd give out this little plaque. And he gave me hitter of the week, from the hit of the week or something. Yeah. And it was just like from that day on, it was like –
I've arrived.
And I was like, and I was a great special teams player, and I was you know, and it just like that one play like really changed my career.
And that was, and it's funny how that happens to guys. It happened to me when I got here. I was picked up off waivers, and you get, and then that next year, 87, when Marv kind of assembled his staff, we kind of finished 86 with Hank Bullis' staff.
Right.
And we got into 87. It was a new staff with Teddy Marchabrota and all those, that crew, you know, and they were really, you know, we kind of hit it, although it was shortened by the strike.
Right.
But, you know, they were looking for players. You know, they were trying to rebuild something. They wanted guys that they could depend on at certain roles, and Mark and I, you know, were able to do some things to get a chance to play, and they were going to say, okay, that's a guy that I can depend on. Yeah. And basically a guy like Bruce, who was in his first year of special teams coordinator,
looking for those.
He latched on to us and wouldn't let go, and it was a huge benefit to both of us.
Now, I've got a caller that wants to ask – you about the block on the onside kick in 92. Can you walk us through that? Do you know what he's talking about?
Yeah. It was in the Houston game.
It was January of 93. But
it was
92.
It was the comeback game.
Yeah.
The greatest comeback game. And I'm thinking we had just scored 10 points. I think we had 10 at the time. And we had scored a touchdown. Or
so
got
35-10.
I believe so.
Third quarter.
And then we were just like,
I can give you a whole rundown, yeah.
Yeah, we're giving the onside kick.
We came back, and remember, Bruce wouldn't let us huddle up because he didn't want them to think we were planning something special.
So
he just kind of waved us by and then was like talking out the side of his mouth, say, hey, surprise onside middle. Out the side of his mouth, like he was just waving us out, like, just go kick it off. Just go kick it off. And he called.
And we had worked on it. We've worked on it all the time.
Yeah.
And my job is to hit, you know, I mean, really, it's for Scott Norwood to recover. I mean, that's really.
Yeah. So you're just a kamikaze guy.
I'm supposed to take out the guy that the ball's kicked that's trying to recover it. And I'm trying to think. The guy slips my name. The guy.
Ferrier or somebody like that?
I can't think of the guy. Then I just, he you know, kind of went down to one knee to scoop it up, and I blasted him, and.
Right.
The ball came loose.
He hit him.
Which you can't really do anymore.
Rick Graff. His name was Rick Graff. Yeah. That was his name.
The ball can go 10, then all bets are off. The ball goes 10 yards, which it did.
Yeah.
He had, or if they touched the ball.
Yeah.
Right.
Which he did both of those, I think. And he went down on a mark, hit him, and the ball popped. Looked like to me, so I was coming in from the kicker's left. It looked like the ball went underneath and through the guy's back almost. I mean,
right.
I don't know how it got out there, but it went behind him. And Scott or Christie just
Christie was right on it.
And I mean, so I went in, like after all that was going, I was the last thing you want to do is let them dogpile.
Because no matter rip the ball out. Because
no matter who starts out with it, somebody else is gonna come out with it. And I knew Steve had it, so I reached in, was pulling him out and
of
got him stood up and was like cheering so that the officials would say, okay, you know,
yeah, Bill's ball
plays dead, you know.
Going this way.
And I didn't even care about it. Mark could have been down there crumpled.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
And honestly, it's like one of my – probably one of my top plays, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, most people know that one play. It was kind of cool to be a part of that. You know?
We had great seats for a lot of great games.
Yeah.
You're telling me.
Sitting around.
You know, and it's,
sitting on the sidelines.
Because here's what the reason that sparked that thing in my head was because when Bobby April was here as the special teams coach, he had a kamikaze play where he would just have four guys on either side of the kicker, like super tight, and they would just bull rush in front of the onside kick, and just smash into whoever was going to be first to field the ball, but it's eight guys coming at him,
stampede.
And then they outlawed that because they've all got to be outside.
Yeah, it's a stampede offsides. Yeah, and that's that used to be the thing. They'd all line up like they were in a huddle. The kicker would lead them out, and they'd chase the kicker right there, and he'd just dribble it along the ground, and you had to have a real, real big set of courage to go.
Yeah. You got eight guys coming at you loaded for bear.
You know, and I always tell this, you know, I just spoke to the Bantams. That was, you know, I had to take it down a little bit. But I told them, you know, that, you know, how important it is to, you know, to be a really good player, is to, you know, be willing to sacrifice, be willing to do what your coach wants you to do. It may not be what you'd prefer to do or where you'd prefer to play. Right now, Zeke's trying to get in here, so he needs someone out front to open the door for him. So you guys can hear him open the door out there. But I told him, you know, I think one of the things that helped me and Steve and really was a big success for our team is we were willing to, you know, Steve was a receiver. He was a good receiver. I was a defensive end. I mean, we played in college. We were great players.
Well, we played our position six days a week.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, most people are like, hey, you're playing special teams. But, I mean, I was a defensive end. I practiced every day. I played hard, you know. I said, but I was here 13 years, and I had one career start.
Yeah.
One. Yeah. I backed up Bruce Smith, and I could have, everybody wants to play. I wanted to play. I mean, I thought I was a good player. But I backed up Bruce and, you know, other guys. But I accepted that, and it became kind of the mantra of our team. Like, it just was an important part of that. Steve was a good wide receiver. He wanted to play. But we accepted our role. And I think there's today's player, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not wanting. Yeah, there you go. Fist pump. There you go. Look at that. I love that.
Yeah, our MSG viewers are watching some of these special teams coverage plays. Hey, we got a crack staff back there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were willing to accept our roles, and I think that's what really made us kind of a successful team. You know, there are too many guys today, I think, aren't willing to do that. You know, we'll play special teams for a little bit. And then we had a lot of great things going for us, and Bruce DeHaven and Marv Levy and, you know.
One of the other things, too, is the league was structured differently back then, too. The salary cap has changed a lot of things because now a young player – is expected to play special teams if he's not starting. And if he doesn't evolve into a starter's role, they're going to find another young player with a potential and put him on special teams. So, and plus, the rules have de-emphasized special teams quite a bit as well. You can't do a lot of the things we did.
Well, we'd be in trouble right now, wouldn't we?
Yeah, you couldn't do it. And so they've de-emphasized special teams to a large extent in certain ways. You know, with a kickoff, you don't even have to cover kickoffs anymore. I mean, you can put anybody out there, if you've got the right kickers, they ain't going to have to cover it. So because of that, you know, guys don't make careers for themselves doing what we did for so long.
Yeah, Mark Pike joining us on the show, along with Steve Tasker, Chris Brown here on the John Murphy Show, as we kind of take a little trip down memory lane and reminisce a little bit. But the one thing I want to bounce off you guys is our video guys down the hall, you know, Buffalo Bills Entertainment, they've put together this five-part television series, which three of the episodes have aired already on MSG. One was top 10 most memorable moments in team history. They just did top 10 offensive players. They did top 10 defensive players. They've got draft diamonds in the rough. And the final installment, which is top 10 individual performances. What I want to bounce off you guys, being the special teamers that you were, can you at least put together for me maybe a top five Bills special teamers of all time? I know, Mark, you're probably limited somewhat to the 11-plus years you were here. Steve, obviously, you've been around and seen some other guys come through the door since you retired. But if you had to put a top five.
Guys here, just guys that.
Bills players.
Of all time.
Top of all time. Best special teamers. I mean, you two obviously would be on the list. But who else would you probably put on that list?
I'd start with Scott Norwood's the only kicker to make the Pro Bowl from the Bills.
Christie's the all-time leading scorer.
Yeah.
He'd have to be on it, right?
So would Brian Moorman, who's the only punter to go to the Pro Bowl.
Two Pro Bowls for him. And then you've got the only return man that's gone to the Pro Bowl, Terrence McGee.
Yeah.
Would he be the returner?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because he's got the most return touchdowns.
And there's, you know, it's hard, too, because we had some really quality special teams players with us when we were playing. Chris Hale, Carwell Gardner, Jamie Mueller.
Chris Moore.
Chris Moore was a great punter. I think he was probably the best punter I ever chased kicks for.
Why? Just because he could hang it so
consistently? Yeah, he had an enormous leg. And
I know
really,
Bruce is always telling him, hang it 40 yards, they'll get it.
Yeah. Well, that's the idea. He was a really unselfish guy. That's why. And he was willing to do it. I mean, the guy, God rest his soul, Rick Tootin, who passed away within the last couple of weeks.
You guys have had a rough year. I mean, Rick Tootin, Bruce DeHaven, it's been a tough year for you
Rick
guys.
Rick Tootin was not an unselfish punter. He wanted to rope it out and wanted us to chase it. And, you know, we did. And we went to the Super Bowl 25 with Rick. But, you know, I thought Chris was a much better punter because he was unselfish and he had the inside the 20 thing. I think he started to think about that a lot more than at that point in history, and now it's become part of the repertoire for all these guys. Who else?
Well, I remembered guys that we, you know,
core
guys. Yeah. You know, we were talking about Hal Garner the other night, man. Just Hal was he was just a tough, nasty play hurt, broken fingers, bummed. I mean, he's just one of those kind. He was just a solid core guy.
He was like
he bought in. He
was
believed.
Like a bull rider. You know,
and
he's going to ride no matter
what.
We
had so many, and we really did. We had so many guys that, you know, Butch Roll, Dwight Drain, Carlton Bailey, Jamie Mueller, Chris Hale,
Carwell Gardner.
Carwell Gardner,
earlier.
Just guys that, like, you know. Throw Adam Linger in
Adam
there.
Linger,
and, you know,
Adam Linger,
how can you forget him?
Adam Linger would have to be on the top 10 list as well. There was a game when our long snapper got a game ball because we had like 15 snaps that he had to get perfect.
Yeah.
You know, like there were six field goal attempts and then seven.
I mean, that's a job
and
that like
never,
people
and
just
– and he was money on all of them.
People just don't realize what a difficult job long snapping, short snapping is. Especially here in the weather conditions, and Adam was the best. I mean, he never missed.
He was gold.
And if he missed, if he missed off target by an inch, he was upset. I mean, that's just how quality he was. But yeah, we were really lucky because like you said, just wasn't Steve and I. We had a lot of really good core guys that just surrounded us, and they were all good position players, and they were all good backup players, and we played together a lot of years. You know,
helps.
Yeah, one of my favorite pictures I have is. We played in 89 in Cleveland. We ended up losing the game.
I got to tell you, I'll confess to you. I told him I wanted him to take a pic. I said, you've got to get a picture of our kickoff coverage.
That was our best group. I've got that picture framed. My wife, we had just had my daughter in the hospital the day before. We have Kramer.
Okay.
We get on the plane. We fly to Cleveland. We play the playoff game. It was cold. It was snowy. That picture is the best picture ever.
It's a great
picture. It's our core guys. Yeah. It's snowing. We got.
It's a dull, dingy, great old Cleveland stadium.
Yeah. It's an old school
on the grass.
Well,
there's no grass.
Well, we're in the huddle.
No grass on the field. It was just a great steam coming out of our mouth.
You know, we're not running. We're not doing. We're standing in a huddle, and we're in what is virtually a mud puddle.
Yeah.
At old Cleveland Stadium, and we're in white Bills jerseys,
white
Bills
pants,
white with red helmet. I mean, we jump, you know, and
it was a classic picture.
It's an awesome
and
picture.
It had a lot of our just really good warriors out there.
Well, I'm glad we finally got you over here after Jim Kelly was dominating your time at the youth football camp. It was good to get you in before our show ended.
So
we do have to take a break.
You're commuting back and forth between Eville and here?
Yeah.
That's a crusher.
Yeah.
But good to have you. Good to see you. Glad you're doing well. And
thank
glad
you
you're helping Jim out here this week.
I appreciate it.
That's Mark Pike along with Steve Tasker. Yeah. I'm Chris Brown. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on the John Murphy Show as we're getting close to wrapping this one up here on a hump day Wednesday. And it's good to have you in, Steve, helping me out today. That was great.
Yeah. I'm not in tomorrow, but I will be back Friday.
Yeah, so I will see you on Friday. We've been talking about quarterbacks for most of the day today and the big contracts and all that. Now, this just came out earlier this week, or over the weekend, actually. But it kind of got leaked inadvertently by Archie Manning. He mentioned that when Tannehill went down with the ACL injury last year, Matt Moore stepped in, kind of held the fort for them, and they still got in the playoffs. Well, Archie Manning, in an interview, inadvertently revealed that Adam Gase, who was Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator in Denver, actually called Peyton after Tannehill got hurt.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, I'll tell you this, too. That's not the only time his phone rang last year either. I'll bet you. I'll bet you. But that's interesting, though.
Because this was Archie's quote. It was at the Manning Passing Academy. It started with Gase, Archie said. He said, hey, 18, Tannehill went down. I think he's going to miss some time. The first question I'm going to get at the press conference in the morning is, if I'm going to try to bring you to Miami, what do you want me to tell them? You believe
that? That's a great line. Adam.
That's a good sell line. I got to give it points for that one.
That is. And listen, I know that we haven't heard much about Peyton since he's retired. I mean, he's got kids he likes, he loves, and wants to spend time with.
Well, you're right.
And he is family-oriented, even while he was playing. I mean, Eli and he talked regularly, his dad. And, I mean, they just got a wonderful family. Cooper, their older brother, is a great – they're wonderful, wonderful people. And, you know, I know that Peyton at some point in the future – I don't know this. This is my opinion. He will be back in the National Football League in some capacity.
We were talking about that yesterday. Probably as an executive, we would think, unless he becomes the spearhead of an ownership group. Do you think he could pull that together, or do you think he's more like an Elway?
I don't think he would want to be
a team president.
I think he would be much more happy being a president like John Elway.
Yeah.
As an owner, I think it's very awkward to insert yourself into the day-to-day running of the organization, particularly when you're one of a group of owners.
Yeah.
But I think Peyton Manning is tailor-made to be the type of guy to have a franchise, bring in his people, and run it the way he wants to run and have it run. In fact, I'm shocked that he's right now isn't running the Tennessee Titans organization from top to bottom. He's got ties to the Tennessee region because he went to school at Tennessee. I think that, and they're looking for, they had, you know, some influx when KS Bud Adams died. There was, you know, some controversy about who's going to take over the franchise. I thought he would have been an enormously stabilizing factor to come in and run it.
So I got to give you this. This is Peyton Manning's response to Adam Gase's text message, okay? Text message came back from Peyton. You tell them I could probably come play, but there's no way I can miss carpool the next 2 weeks. So he was done.
Yeah, carpool.
Carpool the next 2 weeks. Typical Peyton Manning response.
How about your kid getting in the carpool with Peyton Manning?
Yeah.
Nice neighborhood.
How'd you get to school today? My neighbor Peyton drove.
The most important quarterback in the NFL in the last 30 years took me.
I had to mention, I was surprised, though, because, you know, Matt Moore is not bad for a backup quarterback. You could do a lot worse than Matt Moore as a backup in the league. And
Peyton Manning,
he availed himself pretty well. And we saw Peyton Manning's skills eroding terribly in that last year. I mean, throwing for 150 yards a game.
He won a Super Bowl, and he could only throw the football 15 yards.
Yeah.
He won a Super Bowl. He didn't just go to the playoffs, didn't have, like, a winning season. He won the Super Bowl.
Right.
Throwing the
defense
football.
Helped him out a good deal, too. That was
what
the
are
best
you
going
to do?
Football.
I mean, that's all he had to do. And, he would have helped him. But I'll tell you this. Adam Gase doesn't get enough credit for what he did with the Miami Dolphins
last year. There aren't many first-year head coaches who get their team to the playoffs, and he did that. So you got to tip your hat there.
And the other ones who did had been to the playoffs the year before. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like George Seifert went to and won a Super Bowl with the first year's head coach. He took over Joe Montana and the 49ers.
Nice thing for an inheritance.
Right. Adam Gase took a bad Miami team and in a year got him there. And that was impressive.
We're going to take one more break here on the John Murphy Show, but when we come back, it's what we have learned. We'll be talking about that on the other side here on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
One final segment here on the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Tomorrow, sitting in this chair to my left, will be Marlon Kerner, former Bills cornerback, will be joining me for the Thursday edition of the John Murphy Show. And among the people we will have on the program with us tomorrow will be Jamie Eisenberg from CBS Sports, a noted fantasy football expert. We're going to be talking about some NFL roster rankings as some of those came out during the week this week, and we're going to kind of dissect some of that tomorrow to see who really does have the best roster top to bottom. I know you've been waxing poetic about what the Patriots have put together this offseason, so you'd expect them to be high on the list.
Yeah, Atlanta's very high on the list. They were young, athletic on defense, although they were a little bit exposed in the Super Bowl.
Well, didn't really have much
in the second half of the
season.
Super Bowl. They should be solid for a long time. I think a team that really improved this year was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We were talking about that with Jameis Winston.
Jackson.
Yeah, with Jameis Winston cashing in as one of those quarterbacks that's going to get paid eventually. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers look like they're putting it together for a run as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they
Stack
up.
They draft O.J. Howard, and they already had Cameron Brate at tight end, who put a nice season together for them. Now you got O.J. Howard. You're going to run two tights. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Dirk Cutter does down there. I mean, he's probably loving all the tools he's got in his box right now to really kind of turn it up for them.
And Jameis Winston is a guy, for all his issues that came out of Florida State, he is a guy that has acclimated extremely well to the NFL. He's a leader in the locker room. He's an encourager. He's a positive guy. He works hard at it. He watches extra film. He stays in there. He puts, you know, all those extra hours that good quarterbacks put in. He's really making an attempt to attack it on all fronts. You got to tip your hat to the kid. He's a better pro than he was a collegian, and he won a Heisman.
Our thanks to Joel Corey. Our thanks to Mark Pike. Steve, thanks for helping us out today here on the John Murphy Show. Production assistance by J.J. Torito, George Blas, Jeff Koltenak, Tom Hollander. Our producer is Jay Harris. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow here on the John Murphy Show.